It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Ooh, we got a fun panel for you. Paul Thurrott's here, Harry McCracken, the technologizer, and from CNET, Ashley Esquetha. We're going to talk, of course, at the beginning about Microsoft's gaming announcements, and we'll also talk about streaming gaming, Sony versus Google versus Microsoft. Who's going to be the winner? We'll go step by step through the big ransom attack on Norsk Hydro, the aluminum manufacturer, and talk about why it's so tough to fight ransomware and why they call it red velvet cake. It's all coming up next on Twit. This Week in Tech comes to you from Twit's LastPass studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees LastPass? Can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless. Whether they're working in the office or remotely, visit LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 781, recorded Sunday, July 26th, 2020. Slightly firmer denim soft serve. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by ExtraHop. ExtraHop helps you keep your business secure and available with SaaS-based cloud-native network detection and response. Get tips on securing and supporting remote access or check out the full product demo at extrahop.com/twit. And by Masterclass, online classes taught by the world's greatest minds. Get unlimited access to every Masterclass, and as a listener, you'll get 15% off the annual All Access Pass. Go to masterclass.com/twit. And by LastPass. Give your IT department a break and supply them with the tools that really protect your business. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. And by Zendesk. Zendesk is a service-first CRM company that builds software designed to improve customer relationships. Right now, Zendesk is offering a complimentary 6-month remote support bundle that comes with the essential tools your team needs to stay agile. And it takes hours, not weeks, to get up and running. Go to Zendesk.com/twit to get started. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. We're going to talk about the week's tech news with some really nifty people. It's always a pleasure to welcome Ashley Esquetha to our microphone, senior editor at CNET, and she, a senior producer at CNET, and she has her Jack Pumpkin portrait behind her. I love that. Are you in your toy, your playroom, Ashley?
This is my office, yes.
Same thing.
I have. It's the same. It's the same, yeah. My adult playroom. This is, I've been building out, I wish I could show you guys. Maybe next time. I've been building out a vlog set right next to this. Nice. I have like a little streaming space with my computer, and then nice. I have a set with a cool chair and everything, and I just finished it. I'm very excited about it. And you might get to see it on CNET at some point soon.
What we used to call a flash cam set in broadcasting.
Indeed.
And actually, these days, you could be on CNN. You could be on any network in the world. If you have, I have a flash cam set in my house with Skype. You're in. You're on. Mm-hmm. That's Paul Thurrott. I recognize those stentorian tones of Thurrott.com.
And authoritatively agreeing with whatever it is you just said.
Yes, indeed, Leo. You're right. It's good to see you and off the Wednesday show.
That's right.
Actually, Paul and I have spent a lot of time together because Thursday morning we covered.
My wife's starting to ask about that, actually.
That weird ex. We started by that, but let me first introduce Harry McCracken, the technologizer from Fast Company. It's good to see you, Harry.
Good to be here, Leo, and everybody.
Harry just did a great piece we'll ask him about on the Advanced Technology Center at Google, the ATAP. It was really interesting, all the things they're working on. And then I missed this in Fast Company. On June 30th, you celebrated the 50th anniversary of the picture phone, the first Zoom call.
actually the first...
It was the AT&T picture phone, right?
It was like the first one where it was actually a service that people paid for to use for work. The first kind of actual video call was in 1964 at World's Fair in Disneyland.
World's Fair,
In 1970 in Pittsburgh, you could get the equipment and use it at your office.
Yeah, the New York World's Fair in 1964. I remember going as a kid. I was, 7 or 8 years old? And I remember seeing a picture phone and thinking, someday, Daddy, we'll all be. Mm-hmm. And it took the germ to do it.
It took 56 years.
56 years and COVID-19.
And one pandemic.
Yeah, one pandemic later, we're all doing this.
In 1964, there were three places in the country where you could do it. New York, Chicago, and I think maybe Washington, D.C. And it was it cost a lot of money in 1964 dollars to make a three-minute call. So basically it did not catch on. And it also didn't catch on in 1970. They only sold a few hundred.
Yeah, wonder why. I thought, actually, until very recently, it would never catch on because people just didn't want to prepare themselves to appear on a camera.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we're used to it now, right, Ashley? You've got your own little set on here in your house. You're ready to go.
Yeah, yeah. And I work on a video team, so everybody wants to see each other. Everybody right. wants to talk and stuff. So, and especially now when we're not actually getting out and seeing a lot of people, it's like, it's a really nice way to sort of just connect with other human beings. So yeah, yeah. I mean, you amortize it out now that video call-in is a lot cheaper.
Well, and to be fair, I remember in 1970, any long distance call was expensive. If you made remember that, Paul, if you made a long distance call, you'd say, I'm calling nice long distance. We just got to make this quick.
I'll call you on Sunday.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Mom, I'll call you on Sunday for 2 minutes because that's all I can afford. And now we call around the world for nothing. It is literally nothing, right? Kind of hard to believe.
Cheap?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I made a $75 phone call the other day.
Where did you go? What, did you call the moon?
I called India, and the person I was calling asked for it to be an actual phone call rather than Skype or whatever. Oh, and I believe it cost me $75 for like half an hour.
Why would you do that?
Because I can expense it.
Oh, okay. So Fast Company paid for it. It seems odd that they wanted a phone call. Was this like deep throat you were talking to?
Not particularly. I mean, the nice thing about phone calls is they're, if you're on an iPad like I am, if you use your phone, it's easier to record a voice call
right.
than stuff like Skype or Zoom or whatever. So I don't object to it personally. Also, it's pretty reliable, right. which is important if you're recording an interview for a story.
Okay, I get it. That makes sense. So Paul and I watched, I'm sure, Ashley, because you cover gaming, you watched the Xbox event on Thursday morning.
We even had a live stream about it.
I thought you might have.
CNET. It was very fun.
We did too. It was just Paul and me, so it wasn't fun. But
yes, yeah. we tolerated each other.
All that time together. Of course, you're having a good time.
Mostly, we were saying things like, "Is that Tetris? That looks like Tetris. Are they saying they've got a Tetris game? Is that possible?"
And then there
you
was.
Have 1 hour to show games, and you're going to show Tetris.
Tetris.
Yep.
And then there was an actual Tetris.
There
game.
Was an actual Tetris game, and then the other thing that Paul, I was very impressed. They had Tinkerbell. Right. And Paul's going, oh,
well, it was going to be the last game. And I'm floating around with Tinkerbell. I said, you got to be kidding me.
You got to be kidding
me. The only thing that could save this is if she gets eaten by a frog.
And she did. He called it.
And I was
that
like,
is
oh,
amazing. That's amazing. That's clippable. You put that on the internet. Put it on TikTok. Get that up on TikTok.
Impressive. Yeah. There's your TikTok stardom right there in a box. Listen to her. She knows. Yeah. She's with the socials. So the big thing I thought, and at the time I remarked it, but I didn't really think about it, is how almost, I think they said it for every game. Every single game was on Xbox Game Pass. Is that right, Paul? I think it was.
That's right. Yep.
That's a big deal.
And this is the difference in the ways that these companies are going to market for the next gen. I mean, Sony is selling you a console, and Microsoft will sell you a console, but what really Microsoft wants is a subscription service.
Service,
and you can choose your device, you know, through xCloud or through Game Pass.
They didn't, they only said, referred to, they didn't even ever say xCloud. They only referred to gaming the cloud once.
I thought that was interesting. But xCloud is a code name. So that suggests that that name is not permanent.
Yeah. Yeah. If you do the math, it makes a lot of sense, right? So you can either pay, so Sony is hoping that you'll pay, let's say $400 to $500 for their next gen console, and then $60 for a handful of AAA games,
or $70 in some cases.
And then you'll buy into PlayStation Plus, right? And so Microsoft is like, well, cool, but what if?
Yeah.
what if you can't afford a Series X or it's something not interesting to you, maybe you have a PC, a lot of those games are cross-platform, right? So they're being very smart about it as a service and saying, well, if you don't want to upgrade, like, that's okay. We got you. You can play all of these great games on Game Pass. It'll only cost you X amount of dollars a month. And over time, if you consider that over the life cycle of a console, you know, you're looking at a $1,000 spend, maybe more. But it's like
no one's thinking like that. Don't talk like that. No one's spending $1,000.
But if
we're just enjoying games here.
Yeah, you're just enjoying games. It's if you spend $15 a month for 5 years, you know, that's a lot of money. And like it's way more than just.
Sorry, as you were talking, you reminded me of, or you put the idea in my head that in many ways, what Microsoft is doing is the same thing they've done on Windows with PCs, which is just preserving backward compatibility. You know, Apple or Sony is moving ahead very aggressively like Apple does, getting rid of old technology. And Microsoft is over here saying, hold on a second.
You can use your old stuff
fine.
Too.
Yep, yeah, you can go like, for it when you want. And when you do it, it'll be better.
We just want you in the ecosystem. We just want you in the ecosystem. And if you want to subscribe, that's great.
And also it sort of makes sense as part of Satya Nadella's vision of Microsoft in terms of it being so service-oriented and about multiple platforms. And you can use the platform of your choice in a lot of cases.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You can play this Xbox game on whatever you want. You want to play it on PC? We got you. You want to play it on Xbox One? We got you. We want to play it on Series X? Great. Like, here it is. It's on Game Pass. And also, I got to say, like, kudos to Microsoft for making Game Pass extremely compelling with all of these day and date titles. I mean, Halo Infinite is a game that Microsoft could very easily say, no, that's not going to be on Game Pass for a little while. Like, we're going to wait. But no, they just came out swinging. They're like, yeah, you're going to be able to play this on Game Pass. Like, no problem. We got you.
The trick here is going to be the third parties because, you know, the selection of games that are on xCloud in particular, that those are the game, whatever they call it, those are the games that will play anywhere, you know, on a mobile device or whatever. That's going to be up to the developers. And I'm curious to see, obviously Microsoft's, you know, games, their studio games will be in there, but I wonder about the third parties.
Can you get a CD Projekt Red to put a Cyberpunk on that service?
Well, like, could I get Call of Duty in there, right? And I think we know the answer to that one is no, but.
Why is it no?
I think Call of Duty does pretty well financially.
So there's no incentive. There's no technical reason, though, right? They could.
Yeah, I mean, their feeling is like, look, if you want to play it on a. Oh, sorry. But yeah, if you want to play it on PC and Xbox or whatever, a PC and PlayStation, please do. But then you'll have to pay for it twice.
It is a measure of the difference in business models between Sony and Microsoft. Sony is a hardware company. Microsoft is increasingly not even a Windows company. It's a cloud company.
A service company. Yeah.
So it makes perfect sense for Microsoft to say, you know, the truth is we don't care where you play it. And I think the reason obviously they can't impose this on third parties, but they did demonstrate some AAA title. I mean, that Halo Infinite is AAA, high quality, 4K, 60 frames per second. And if they can stream that from the cloud, then there's no reason any game couldn't be streamed from the cloud, right?
Right. Yeah. I think that's the future of video games, right? Where it's, you know, we're now seeing an infrastructure emerge that, you know, hopefully for most people enables them. I mean, I know that there are a lot of communities still that are underserved in the way of high speed internet. So that becomes a problem, right? And one of the things that actually kept the Xbox One from having that feature on it that did those online checks was the military.
Submarines.
Military was very upset because, you know, a lot of times you don't have access.
They took a lot of heat for saying you can't do it in a submarine.
Someone literally said, what do you say to someone who's on a submarine? And they said, well, maybe you should stick with the Xbox 360.
Yeah. I think the guy who said that got fired, didn't he?
That's right. He's gone.
He's gone.
Yeah. He doesn't work there anymore. It's not a good strategy. And the thing is, so the infrastructure's not there yet, I think, to make the full leap. But it is not a wild idea, especially now that we're seeing consoles go without optical drives. You know, the next step of that is now we have this really, really inexpensive box that doesn't even store anything. It just plays our games off our servers for a subscription fee, you know, in the future. Yeah. And you buy a controller and you connect it to that thing. And that's, you know, there you go.
That's kind of interesting because it makes the Sony, the Sony PlayStation 5 is for people on submarines. And for anybody, for everybody else, yes. There's Xbox.
That's literally the marketing tagline.
It is. This is for people in submarines.
But in a way, that's where Paul and Mary Jo and I on Windows Weekly have had a constant conversation about the future of computing being in the cloud. That, you know, boy, there was a great piece in Bloomberg Business this week, about the Norse, the big Norse aluminum company's ransomware attack. And it was just devastating. Actually, it's well worth reading if you haven't read it. Norsk Hydro lost $60 million. They had cyber insurance, but it only paid about $3 million of the $60 million in costs. They were prepared in every way a company could be prepared for ransomware, but they're so distributed and they have so many processes on computers that it just devastated them for weeks. They were down. They couldn't make products. They couldn't ship products. They couldn't service customers. They couldn't even easily pay their own employees. Their payroll system was down. They had to pay their employees in Brazil by copying the previous payroll and manually eliminating anybody who'd been fired since then sending the same check out a second time. And it all started, this was the thing that was devastating. The way these attackers got in, it was Fin6 is the name that's given to this hacking community because they're financial only. They're not like mafiosos. They're just trying to make money. Is they intercepted an email from an Italian client of Norsk Hydro to the company, didn't modify the email. There was an attachment. They took the benign attachment, turned it into the malware, and forwarded it on. So for the person receiving it, it was exactly the email they expected from an existing customer with an attachment they expected. They opened it.
Oh, wow.
And that's it. The infection happened in December. The attackers had complete access to the network, as far as anybody could tell, until they triggered the ransomware in March.
Jeez.
Wow. 4 months, they're wandering around in the network, probably exfiltrating whatever they could, finding whatever they can, figuring out what the attack points are, and then launching the attack 4 months later. And it was, in fact, I'm surprised it was only $60 million. We've seen companies lose $1 billion in ransomware attacks. So it seems like they got off a little bit light, but it's a stunning story. But it does make you think, let me just finish the thought, because I want to bring it back to what we were talking about, was it does make you think that on-prem computer systems may not be going forward this most secure thing to do.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No,
Paul,
I mean,
ahead.
It's...
Paul, no, it's... I work for a very small company. So, fast company, CNET, obviously a giant, big publishing company. So I work for a company that employs 6 or 8 people. And we were also hit with a ransomware attack.
You were? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I don't think I ever mentioned this.
No.
We had a backup. we kind of just reset everything and we went back. But I later found out to my amusement that the amount of money they asked for with us was $478.
Oh, my God.
I think they adjusted based on the size of the company. so they figured that was all we could afford.
They have a per head count maybe. It's like the
ransomware request for this one. Was unknown. It said, contact us, let's negotiate. But Norsk Hydro never did. They said, we are not going to pay because we don't want to look like a soft mark. Right. I'm sure they had backups, but the problem it was so distributed, 35,000 employees in Europe, in the U.S., in Brazil, and so much of their stuff was on-premises computers running processes. They talk about the New York aluminum factory was heavily computerized to know what to make, what molds to use. They had to go to a paper system and faxes. They have 50,000 different aluminum dies for making different parts, and it uses software to keep track of what's being made, to tell employees which die to pick off the shelf. They had no idea what to make because it was all on a computer somewhere. So that's going to be one of many impetuses moving, admittedly, internet fast internet's not global, but I bet you every single Norsk Hydro facility has a fast connection. Why wouldn't they move this stuff into the cloud? The biggest trouble they had getting back online wasn't that they didn't have backups, but that they had to go through every single machine and make sure there was nothing malicious on it.
Right.
Because the guys were there for four months. They could have hit little time bombs everywhere.
Hit everything. Yeah, exactly.
I'm currently checking my Garmin watch like every 10 minutes to see if it works again. And I had no idea.
Is that back yet or is it?
Not as of a little bit before we started this. I had no idea the degree to which my watch was heavily dependent on Garmin services to just get stuff onto my phone. I kind of thought there was much more of a direct connection between watch and phone rather than watch to a Garmin cloud server back to phone.
They've been down for 3 days.
Wow.
Also due to a ransomware attack.
Oof.
I'd like it to work again.
Hard thing.
Yeah.
I'm torn. I hope that Garmin is able to get back and running without paying anybody anything. Apparently, there's some question whether it's even legal for them to pay. But I'd like my watch to work. But I'm also a little bit patient because it's such a terrible precedent to pay these people.
Yeah, the last I read, Garmin had not decided whether to pay or not. They were considering it.
I hope they have really good backups, although apparently even if you have backups, they can instantly get infected.
Yes, they have to be cold backups, right? If it's a hot backup. And by the way, you could thank the services of the National Security Agency, the NSA, for making it possible to so quickly worm through networks with the fine Eternal Blue malware that they, accidentally leaked out a few years ago and is widely used by ransomware attacks to spread over networks. I don't know if these attacks used Eternal Blue or not. So Garmin services have been down for 3 days. That's
incredible.
The other thing maybe more concerning is 4 days. Yeah, the other thing more concerning maybe is a lot of aviation uses it.
That's terrifying. Well, good thing nobody's flying right now, right?
Yeah.
Like no one's going anywhere. But that is terrifying. That is terrifying.
They need totally up-to-date data for flight maps. So.
Right.
Fly Garmin, and as a result, the Fly Garmin website and mobile app are down. Call centers are down. Unable to receive calls, emails, or chats.
Gosh.
Wow. And I don't, you know, in the case of Norsk Hydro, they were well prepared. In fact, it could have been worse if they, in the middle of the night, they had, you know, somebody saw something that had been going on, and they had a response that they had, you know, they had a playbook that they had planned. And they implemented it immediately, and it still was devastating.
Not enough.
So I don't know how you plan for that. So that is one argument for getting, I don't know, would it be safer in the cloud?
It's so hard because, you know, it's the same argument that people have of why they keep physical media, right? So it's like, oh, I have, you know, I like to collect Blu-rays because, you know, I'm not... You know, I have friends who are like this, who are very much like they want physical media because they are like, I can't trust that a company is going to be in business. And then what happens to all of the things that I purchased there? They're just digital. They're nothing. It's nothing. It's a bunch of bits. And they're just like, and I won't have that anymore. And so it's a very similar type of argument where, you know, there's something to be said for a physical backup, a physical copy, you know, and it is one of the biggest flaws, I guess, or one of the biggest risks in going entirely digital. Gotta be prepared. And even then, like you said, you could be prepared, you could have a book, you could have everything ready to go, and it still might not be enough.
Well, it seems like there ought to be something we could do, but I guess I talked to a CEO on the radio show. It was last call on the radio show an hour ago. Who said we got attacked. We had a mirrored knock. We had two network centers. One was a mirror of the other, and just by good fortune, this was the plan. We were able to switch over, so we were only out for a couple of hours. We were able to get fully up and running. He says, "Is that enough?" I said, "Well, you're just lucky that there wasn't a connection at that moment between those two mirrors, because you could have mirrored the attack, and then you'd be out of luck." I don't know what you do. I really don't know what you do. Be it a good topic for maybe our next LastPass seminar. What do you do? What do you do? There's lots to talk about. We'll talk more. Is there anything more to say about the Xbox thing? When are they going to announce xCloud? Do you know, Paul? When is that going to be officially public?
xCloud becomes part of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. I thought they said end of August.
End of August? Sounds pretty soon. I feel like I heard end of August as
soon.
Well. So.
Yeah, okay.
Soon.
That's soon. Yeah, that's pretty soon.
Somebody has to blink first, right? We're going to get pricing, yes. I assume, next month. It has to be in August, because then you're giving people about 90 days to decide whether or not they want to pre-order a, you know, a relatively large purchase. I feel like it has to be next month. But they're playing chicken with each other, because I think Xbox is a little bit, they don't want a repeat of the $399 moment at E3. That was really not good.
Fill us in. What was that?
So Xbox had announced, okay, here's our console, here's how much it costs, all this stuff. And then at the end of this PlayStation E3 conference, it comes out and he's like, $399. Like, that was it. It was just like $399.
This is the original, the PS4, you mean?
The PS4. And people lost their freaking minds. Like, it was just such a mic drop moment to come out and say,
Microsoft was bundling Kinect. Yeah, so it was too expensive.
Yeah, they were bundling Kinect, so it was expensive. It was $499, and Sony just comes out and is like,
so that's why you play chicken. You wait and you hope that somebody will announce the price so you can undercut it.
Yeah. Or at least match it. Right?
Don't get caught with your pants down.
That's what they're waiting for. I think both of them are doing that.
Sony bought Gaikai. Do they still have cloud gaming?
They have PlayStation Now. It's not as robust as Game Pass. I think they will find potentially an incentive to expand on it quite a bit, maybe in this next console generation. I mean, they should. If they're looking at Microsoft, I mean, that is something they should be very interested in. But they're relying right now on a lot of exclusives.
And can you play PlayStation Now on anything, or do you have to have a PlayStation to play it?
I think some of the games you can play not on PlayStation. Exclusive to certain
consoles.
On a PS4
or PC, but not on your Android phone.
I thought it was PS. Yeah, PC and PS4.
So, and then there's Google Stadia, which you can pretty much play anywhere, including on a TV set.
Mm-hmm. But Stadia is kind of, it always felt like Stadia was sort of a proof of concept. I don't know. I'm still waiting on that. Google is not, their track record's not that great with, trying new stuff. They try so much. And then
their big mistake
actually end up lasting for a really long time.
There's free there, but most people pay a monthly fee, but you get some limited games. It's weird because you buy the game at full price. But you don't own it. It's on their server.
Yeah.
That has to be a sticking point for some people. It would be for me.
And when you stop subscribing, you no longer have access to that game.
Bye-bye game.
Like, yeah, you bought it. You paid full price for it. You know, it's like for a subscription, that's different. Obviously, you stop your subscription, you lose access. Like, people understand that. But to pay $60 for something like Destiny 2 or Assassin's Creed or whatever it is, and then just not have access to it once you decide that service isn't for you anymore is... a lot of people aren't interested in that.
Will xCloud be Stadia-like in the sense that you could play it on any device, except that it's a subscription price that includes a bunch of games? It's Game Pass Plus.
Yeah, it's basically an extension of the Xbox ecosystem to other device types using streaming. But it's going to be a subset. I mean, I think of what you get from Xbox Game Pass and from what you get just from Xbox.
So right not now, every game on Xbox Game Pass will be available on xCloud, but some set will.
No. Right now, I think it's about 100 games. I might be confusing that with Xbox Game Pass, but it's a fairly limited selection, but it's in preview right now.
Paul, do you think they're going to charge an extra surcharge to have access to xCloud, or do you think it will be just included but limited in scope?
I think it's just going to be included because Xbox Game Pass is actually pretty expensive per month. It's $14.99. Mm-hmm. And there aren't really great ways to get a good deal on that. You know, you probably saw they got rid of the 1 year Xbox Gold, Xbox Live Gold subscription. Mm-hmm. You can't get a 12-month pass on anymore. So I think Xbox. I'd have to look it up, but Xbox
Game Pass. Or even a six month pass too, right?
Yeah, like a 1, 3, 6 something would be better than footing whatever that is, $150 or whatever.
Well, my most excited story of the week is the fact that XPlay is still playing Pong in that deserted warehouse. This is a
XPlay's back, baby.
This is a big promo from something called G4 TV that apparently Comcast is going to bring back next year. And this tagline is, we never stopped playing. A lot of people tweeted me saying, what do you think? I said, oh, please.
Yeah.
Leo, you're not gonna have like a Twitch show on
G4? Somehow I don't think they're gonna be inviting me.
You're not gonna stream DOS games? Like, I don't understand.
Oh, I could be the good old gamer.
I'm gonna do that on Twitch. I'm gonna start doing like Abandonware on Twitch. That's a little fun live summer pandemic project for me.
Yeah.
Like a Sierra game live, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Gotta play Freddy Farkas, Frontier Pharmacist. Yes.
There you go.
Get my DOS game.
Hugo's House of
Horrors.
Duke Nukem. What was the predecessor to Doom? Remember that game?
Wolfenstein 3D, right?
Wolfenstein, and then before that, there was a little guy that flew around.
Oh yeah,
remember that?
Maybe the sideways scroller game.
No, it's kind of like Duke Nukem in very low res.
yeah. So it was a kiddie game. It was kind of a kiddie theme thing.
Oh man, I
loved it, and I can't remember the name.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Probably because they made it for Apogee or something back at that time, right? It wasn't an id game. It was before id had their own games.
It was pre-id.
Before id was id.
Fit on like one floppy disk, I think.
Yeah. What was the name of that?
It's got some kind of kid's
Commander Keen. Thank you, chat room. Commander Keen. It's back, baby. I would pay money to watch Ashley Esketha play Commander Keen on a Twitch stream.
You may not even have to pay money to do it. Maybe I'll just add it to the list. I was looking at a bunch of Abandonware stuff the other day, and I'm like, man, I should play some of these games on Twitch because I'm not a streamer. I don't know. I don't know that whole world. And also sometimes
I'm glad to hear you say that.
Enjoy my life.
You're young. You're hip. And
I'm not hip. I would not use that word to describe myself. But I'm enthusiastic. So and I love all those old DOS games. I love old point-and-click adventures. Yeah. It might be fun. Why not?
That's a great idea. If you don't do it, I'll do it.
All right.
That's a great... Except that I'd have to play games all the time. Oy.
Oh, what a terrible life, Leo. Oh, no.
Sorry I hung up on you guys. I was really upset about the
Commander
Keen thing.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah. Okay. You had to go find your floppy.
Yeah.
Leo stole your idea. It's fine.
Let's take a little break. That was our gaming segment. That was a lot to talk about. I'm very interested. I feel like of the three, it's three, right? I mean, On Live's gone. There's nobody else. It's PlayStation Now, Stadia. Well,
Amazon's
I guess.
Coming.
Amazon's going to do something. That's right. Service. And there's xCloud. I think Sony will do something like that.
Yeah, they'll evolve PlayStation Now. It's just It's not quite as.
I feel like xCloud is the one to beat right now.
Wow. I agree with that. I think it's very good.
Just like Windows Phone was the one to beat in 2010.
Yeah, that's right.
I will go to my grave, Paul. I will go to my grave arguing that the sound the keyboard made in Windows Phone was the best sound.
Wow, you're probably right.
That little pop. It's like a soft pop. It was the most perfect. A
soft perfection. Is that what you're looking for?
Tactile keyboard sound. Yeah. It was the best sound.
Yep.
There's no knock on Windows Phone. It just didn't make it. It was really great.
Wasn't quite there.
It wasn't the Zune of smartphones.
No.
Too late.
The Kin was the Zune of smartphones.
The Windows Phone was good.
Rest in peace.
Hey, my son used a Kin for a couple of years. He loved that phone.
Really? So they only sold it for 3 months, but he used it for 2 years.
Of course, I had two of them. I made him use it. I was like, we're all on Verizon. You're using this damn thing.
Did the Kin also have soft perfection?
He had a little helmet. He had to wear. No, he was, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, he wasn't getting an iPhone. I can tell you that.
You're not getting an iPhone, kids. A dream on.
Here's your Kin.
Here's your Kin. That's cruel.
Enjoy, Enjoy getting tossed.
Accept this as the punishment that it is.
You're going to get a wedgie when you go to school, but that's okay.
Stuffed into a locker.
Character building. That's right. Ashley Skethis here. Senior producer at CNET. Great to see you again. How old's the baby now?
He turned a year old last month. Louise. The end of last month. So, yeah, he's running, talking, says hi all the time. Hi.
Maybe we'll get a cameo. We haven't seen him in a while.
Maybe. He has been skipping his afternoon naps. Uh-oh. So he just, like, rolls around in his crib talking to himself for an hour and a half, which basically I do in bed, in my own bed. I talk to myself for an hour and a half, but it's way less cute.
What do you fantasize you're broadcasting?
Just talking about, I'm sure, yeah.
You're playing your good old game and...
Yeah.
Practicing your
or yelling at people in, like, Overwatch.
Harry McCracken, the technologizer, also here from Fast Company. Great to see you and your classic TWA poster. Oh,
I put that up so I'd have something in the back when I do Zoom calls and Skype calls and so forth.
I like
it. I also have a Bugs Bunny saw, which I don't think you can see.
Oh, yeah, I see it when you bow down. Yeah. Right above your Epson printer. Nice to see you.
Very good.
Yep. And, of course, Paul Theroux, Theroux at Theroux.com.
I also have a printer.
He also has a printer. What is that printer? That is looks like an
It's an HP all-in-one.
Yeah. It's very white.
Yes. Got two paper trays, Leo. It's really nice.
Oh, fancy. Fancy schmancy. I'm actually amazed at the number of our hosts and contributors who have printers in their shot. Stacey Higginbotham also has a printer in your shot.
Yeah.
I try to keep mine in cabinets well below eye level, but it's just me.
I'm looking at mine. Probably, it's way up on the top of a bookshelf.
We possibly have five printers in this house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. We have at least five at home. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure.
What are you printing?
Nothing.
Nothing.
That's the beauty of it. But if
Brother Laser Printer, it's like black and white.
Ever have to.
And it's like sometimes I have to print out like a form or something.
I printed a form yesterday. I did a 401k form yesterday, which I printed and started to fill in by hand, but my hand cramped up after a few letters.
So, Leo's like, pens!
I can't use a pen! So I then fired up my PDF form filler and laboriously, this is not an easy thing to do if it's not a form, to carefully, you type everything out and it's all whopper-jawed and kooky and online, and you drag everything in line, and then you have to select it all and take select courier so it looks like you typed it. It took me like 4 hours for one page. And this is the future. This is how technology is changing the world. Our show today brought to you by Extra Hop. Oh, these guys are cool. They originally started to do performance monitoring, but they can do so much more in this new IT reality where remote access is on a massive scale. I mean, we're all working at home. Cloud is happening. Multi-cloud is happening. A constant increase in the devices in your home, the Internet of Things devices. And add on top of that, the crazy rise in cybercrime. And now imagine yourself as an organization trying to keep track of all of that. From the cloud to the data center to the customer, that's where ExtraHop is such a big help. It gives you something you need to protect and scale your business, unified visibility, and a context for the things you're seeing. Plus, if it does it right, you're going to have intelligence response workflows so that teams can collaborate easily and respond quickly to any situation. That is ExtraHop. It helps you detect threats and performance issues 95% faster and respond 60% more efficiently. This is exactly the kind of tool you need in this ransomware, high vulnerability world. ExtraHop helps keep your business secure and available with SaaS-based cloud-native network detection and response. They've got sensors everywhere. I'll give you some examples. Wizards of the Coast, you know them, of course, Magic the Gathering. They secure and support their AWS cloud using ExtraHop. The last thing you want is, oh, yeah, they left a bucket open online and we got all the data out of it. No. That's the last thing you want. Chief Architect and Information Security Officer at Wizards of the Coast, Dan McDaniel, said there is no other company that aligns to supporting the DevOps model we use, the speed, the lack of friction, than ExtraHop. Ulta Beauty uses ExtraHop to secure their Google Cloud and to keep networking and security teams closely aligned so engineers can focus on innovation. Senior IT engineer John Kreese says, before ExtraHop, we had limited visibility to what was going on in our cloud, but now we can quickly identify vulnerabilities and exploits and understand how our applications are performing in the cloud. We know now, just that story about Norsk Hydro, that every minute counts when you detect a threat, and how you respond and how quickly you respond determines exactly how much it's going to cost you in the long run, how quickly and well you will respond. You need a plan, you need the sensors, and you need actionable alerts, and that's what you get with ExtraHop. Take control of your cloud security right now. Go to extrahop.com/twit. And if you want the best eye candy, they have a really fun full product demo online. You can actually watch it at work. extrahop.com/twit. You will say, oh, I got to have this. I need this kind of information. There's also some great information there on securing and supporting remote access. That's all available free right now. extrahop.com/twit. These guys are right on point for what you need in today's scary world. extrahop.com/twit. It's going to be red velvet cake. Sounds tasty. Sounds delicious.
That's a joke I have with my daughter. Red velvet cake is nothing more than chocolate cake that's a different color.
Yeah, with a little coffee.
But I insist that it is the apex of cake taste.
I agree 100%. We learned this on All About Android. I got to say, congratulations to our All About Android team, Jason Howell and Ron Richards and Florence Ion, because they had Android Vice President of Engineering David Burke on.
Look how sure he looks. Look at Jason's face.
Yeah, he's very cocky.
That's the face of a man who's like, I got a scoop.
He's determined.
I'm getting a scoop. Nobody knew what Android 11 would be called. We knew it would be Android R. They didn't have a dessert name for Q. Even though they didn't announce it publicly, Burke, two scoops really for you. Two scoops of delicious Android ice cream for you, Jason Howell. Because Burke said internally Q was quince tart. They just never told anybody. And while the dessert name stopped being used for public releases, they still used them internally. And once again, Android 11 is referred to internally at Google as RVC or Red Velvet Cake. But Burke says we're not going to use that one publicly either. But at least we know. I want to think red velvet cake every
time. It's going to look really disturbing if I like cut into an Android cake and open it, and it just looks like internal. It just be really creepy.
Well, in fact,
be a little weird.
The folks at XDA Developers made an illustration worthy of Paul Theroux.
Exactly like that.
There it is.
it's a little bloody in there.
It looks a little wrong, right?
Oh, it looks tasty.
It doesn't quite look. I mean, it does make me want cake, but also it looks
tasty.
Very upsetting.
They stopped. I was sad. They stopped doing the statues. Remember they had the little statue garden?
Yeah, outside. They had little statues out there.
It actually, I hadn't seen it in a while, but apparently it was getting kind of ratty.
Sure.
You know, like there used to be an amusement park in Santa Cruz over the hill just by Borland called Santa's Village.
So it's like a rundown.
It's like something out of a horror game.
Yep.
You know, kind of like.
They should just put McDonald's things out there now. They can have like Mary McCheese, you know, the Hamburglar.
Yeah.
Buy those Chuck E. Cheese, those old Chuck E. Cheese animatronics that are no longer being used. Just toss
the Hall of Presidents could be out there.
Animate the Android.
The Hall of Presidents. Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of like, unused animatronics. I'm sure they could figure out.
Four score. The fiberglass starts to look a little threadbare. You can kind of see through some of the. Not a good thing. That would be
Google's
though.
Really a struggling company, Leo, and they cannot afford
it.
Upkeep fiberglass. This is like just absurd. You can't ask them to do such things.
So sad.
Maybe they got tired of the tourism, like all the Android fans coming to take pictures with it.
I thought that's what it was for.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was what it was for too. Maybe they got tired of it. Maybe they were just like, okay, we're kind of over this. Like, we don't want anybody coming over here anymore. We just let them rot in the sun.
Yeah, they were starting to look a little. There's Jelly Bean, Honeycomb. Yep.
They abandoned those statues like
Ice
Google
Cream
Plus.
Sandwich, Gingerbread. Is that Eclair? Oh my God. Yep. They just They were sitting in the sun. They were baking. They just, but they were big. I didn't realize they were that big.
They were so cute. Yeah. I have a whole box of those, like, little Series those guys. 1 Android figurines.
Yeah.
I wrote about I wrote about IBM's original San Jose campus, which at least last time I checked is still there, but it's in ruins. And it's next door to a Lowe's Home Improvement Center. And it's kind of fascinating because I've seen photographs of IBM's campus back when it was new. And it looks incredible. Yeah. And it's just sort of slow.
So it's like an auto industry thing from Detroit.
Part of it is just this really nice 1950s building that's slowly falling apart. And there's sculpture, which is lying on the ground, getting rusty.
It's the Chernobyl of Silicon Valley.
Are influencers there taking pictures of it? Because it's not decrepit enough.
Somebody in the chat room has said somebody in the chat room is saying, and maybe it's true, Khrushchev visited that site.
That's how I discovered it. He was
squatting upstairs.
He visited it in like 1959
it's
or something.
It's true. Oh my God.
I wrote about it on Fast Company several years ago.
Oh my God.
Oh, I'm sure in 1959 it was the office complex of the future. You know,
it was. I mean, it was a lot like a Silicon Valley campus, but it had like great food and it was informal by IBM standards.
Oh my God. There he is, nice IBM headquarters. San Jose, Nikita Khrushchev.
Looks like a community college.
The Soviet premier. It does, doesn't it? Every school in America built in that era looks like that.
Yeah.
Kind of flat, diamond-shaped windows. Wow. Nikita Khrushchev in the IBM plant. And there they are. Look at the size of those motherboards. Holy cow.
Well, literally hardwired.
The hard drive was embedded there.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What great footage.
That was from the PBS show American Experience. It's called Cold War Roadshow. And it features commentary by Khrushchev's son, Sergei, who was there with his father.
The one thing people remember is that Khrushchev wanted to go to Disneyland and they wouldn't let him. But as a second choice, he got to visit IBM and I think maybe like a John Deere factory or something.
Jesus.
I thought you were going to say Knott's Berry Farm.
Okay.
Like, that's always Nikita, the second place in Southern California, right? Like, can't go to Disneyland, got to go to Knott's.
Got Knott's Berry Farm. That's exactly why Knott's Berry Farm exists. For people who can't make it to Disneyland. Look at this. Look at that sculpture in the water. It kind of looks like Epcot.
Beautiful. Yeah.
City of the Fish.
That looks great.
That story
right
might
now.
Have a picture of the ruins, too.
Oh, really?
Is there a three-eyed fish in that pond now?
Yeah.
The ghost of all the
Wow, there's the cafeteria. But come on, those chairs. Can you imagine Apple having lawn chairs like that in their outdoor?
I have some of those in Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
They look great. There's my pool area.
Oh, here's the Ramac computer.
The pride of San Jose.
Random access memory accounting computer.
I think it was like the first computer with a hard drive maybe or something like that.
Those hard drives are so big. Remember that? They took a plane, the 747. Oh, there's the Lowe's.
Supposedly, that the tiles on those Lowe's refer to punch cards.
Oh wow! Oh wow!
Well, and it looks like the original. Is that like part of the original building that they used for the Lowe's?
They tore down. There was a mysterious fire in one of the original buildings, and after it burned down, they built the Lowe's. I've been back since I took this photo here, and it's in worse shape than it was when I wrote this story a few years ago.
Look at this. This sculpture that we saw in the fountain. It's now on the ground. Yeah. The fountain is empty.
Huh.
Oh, man. That says everything about Silicon Valley and technology.
Oh, and there's a park in Death Ramac.
They did a little nod to the front of the IBM building, right? Like, if we see look at the picture of the Lowe's, the front of the Lowe's.
Yeah. Apparently that is a reference to it. And there's a little park called Ramac Park.
Wow.
Oh.
So who owns that land? Why is it still there? Why haven't they
A lot of it has been sold. I think there are some apartments. Whoever bought IBM's hard drive division, maybe Western Digital, at least for a while, made hard drives there.
Wow.
But that building there, at least as of a couple of years ago or so, was still there.
Can it be? Who is the guy who said, sorry, Mr. Premier, we can't go to Disneyland, but we have arranged visit to Tractor Factory.
Sure.
Not again, says Nikita.
No.
Oh, man. I can't take one more tractor.
That's why he said he was going to crush us. He was
really mad at and he was really impressed by the cafeteria at IBM more so than the computers. He liked the tractors because he was into farming technology.
Sure. Yeah.
Computers, not so much.
Fast forward, Harry spent some time at a little bit more modern facility, Google's ATAP lab. This was your last trip before the quarantine. And this was a great article. We actually talked a lot about it when it came out on Fast Company a couple of weeks ago. You got some great access there.
It was fun because they've been really quiet. They used to get a lot of attention back when they started. They were originally part of Motorola when it was part of Google. And they spent a lot of time talking about stuff like security tags you could swallow and that kind of stuff. And over the last few years, they just have not promoted themselves much. And they got merged into Google's hardware group. And Soli, the radar technology, and the Pixel 4 is kind of the one major thing that's come out lately. But
that's actually, you have a picture of the Soli chip, which is really tiny. Yes. Small enough now to be embedded in a phone or other devices.
And their mission these days is sort of to try to give devices intelligence without trying to put all the smarts into the device itself. So a lot of the intelligence can live in the cloud. And the stuff I saw involved stuff like a smart remote control that you can kind of point at different devices in your house. And like you can drag and drop something from, like you can drag and drop a YouTube video to your speaker if you want to listen to it. They're working on a smart pen that's a little bit like LiveScribe, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Except you don't need to use special paper. You can digitize your stuff just with ordinary paper, and you can have it translate stuff on the fly and so forth.
This harkens back to the glory days of Bell Labs, AT&T's R&D facility, Xerox's Palo Alto Research Center, SRI, these great blue sky research labs. Is this something companies still do? We just don't know about it? Or is it less likely that you're going to see this kind of blue sky R&D in modern America?
Well, I mean, Google is still like rife with R&D labs of all sorts, like the X Lab and all kinds of stuff. I think the interesting thing about ATAP is it's now very closely affiliated with Google's hardware operation. It's not entirely blue sky. They want to be ambitious, but they do want to create stuff that might logically show up in hardware Google might create. And so it's at least very promising. I mean, nothing they've done so far has knocked it out of the park or changed the world. Soli is really intriguing, but the Pixel 4 has been apparently a disappointment sales-wise. And some people really like Soli. Other people said that it was...
That was the technology that let you wave in front of the phone and go to the next track. I have it. I've never once used it. I always call it Soli. They say it's Soli. Is that how they like to pronounce it?
I think I'm mispronouncing it probably. I think it is Soli. And it also does things like if you, in order to conserve battery life, it can tell if you're like reaching towards your phone and it will turn on the face unlock before you've actually lifted the phone.
So it is doing stuff, even though I'm not aware of it, that's valuable.
The always on display is actually only always on if you're there. If you leave, it knows you're not there and it can turn it all the way off.
Oh, well, that's cool. You also talk about Jacquard, their smart fabric technology.
That's out in a number of things. There's a backpack and Levi's jean jackets and
high priced.
And like a smart sole for soccer players. Yeah. And it's, that's not been a mass market success. But when I talk to Dan Kaufman, the head of the lab, he says that basically there's value in getting stuff out, even in small quantities, because if you have actual people buying stuff and using it, you will learn things you will not in like a beta test.
That makes sense. Yeah, like you in any beta test, once you get it out to the public, like inevitably somebody thinks of something that you never considered. So why
the example they gave is there's something called the Levi's commuter jacket with Jacquard built in, and a woman bought it, and she pointed out that when it gives navigation directions, it was giving these very detailed step by step directions, and if it's a commuter jacket, people tend to know how to get to work and home and therefore they don't need those detailed directions. And because the intelligence was in the cloud, they were able to adjust that based on her feedback.
Oh, that's cool. Huh. So they didn't have to.
I think you have to expect that these people who buy these fairly expensive things with Jacquard built in have to have a certain amount of patience and understand that it's still a somewhat emerging technology, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beta product.
This is the challenge for Silicon Valley. So a lot of those early R&D labs, Xerox is the most famous, Xerox PARC, invented technologies we use today like crazy, but Xerox never made a penny off of any of it. It just kind of filtered out into the world and was used by other people, but they invented the mouse, the GUI, the menu, Windows.
Laser printer.
In fact, there's a book, How Xerox PARC Invented the World and Made No Money. I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's kind of sad. And then on the other hand...
Fumbling the future,
that's right. And then on the other hand, you could do stuff, it looks like ATAP's doing, which is you're working very closely trying to make products. But the problem with Silicon Valley is everything they create seems to be driven by Silicon Valley and less by humans. You know, so it is nice if they can adapt over time. But Silicon Valley's strategy just seems to be create whatever you can and see and just throw it and see if any of it sticks, because we don't know what people want. Is that a reasonable point of view, or should they be talking to people more? I think most about is glasses. That seems to be what everybody is converged on is, well, that's going to be the next big thing. But then somebody asked me yesterday on the radio show, what happened to voice assistants?
Yeah, exactly. How come ambient computing didn't become the next big thing?
It's plateaued completely.
Yeah, that natural conversation thing was supposed to be the future, that you could walk in, the voice would understand context. You could say, I want lights on, I want this done, whatever it is. And all I get, and I tore out all my smart speaker stuff. All I get from this stuff is, sorry, Paul, I don't understand.
Yeah. I found this on the web.
I'll ask, where was this photo taken? I'm sorry, I don't understand. What do you mean you don't understand? You're showing a photo that I know has metadata in it. You know,
yeah.
I would understand if I had access to the file. You know, it's crazy.
Did they give up? What happened?
Amazon has had a bunch of pieces of news lately about ways to make Alexa more intelligent and to let it dive deeper into third-party apps. So they're certainly still at work at it.
Yeah, and by the way, that's a great example of a company that does do a lot of research that is aimed at bringing products to market, not just aimed at
very
let's see what
concrete.
Works, you know?
Yeah, very concrete.
And that stuff came out of some guys from Microsoft, and Microsoft didn't think it had a future, and they
perfect
went to Amazon.
Example. You know? Perfect example. That's what happens now is the people move. The engineers say, well, you know what? It's a very fluid job market. I'm going to go where somebody appreciates what I just thought of.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, how are they going to afford those $500,000 a month apartment rentals in San Francisco without moving back and forth, Leo?
Yeah.
They got to eat.
Woz is suing YouTube. Woz and a number of other people suing over a Bitcoin scam in his name. He filed suit on Wednesday. Steve Wozniak, founder of Apple. I just assume everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say Woz. there were videos that used his name and likeness to convince viewers to send cryptocurrency during a fake Bitcoin giveaway, perhaps doubling.
Isn't this the same as the Twitter?
It's exactly the same. They even used Elon Musk and Bill Gates. It was the event was on YouTube for months, promised to give viewers back double what they sent. When viewers, of course, gave them cryptocurrency, they didn't get anything back. Woz and 17 other victims said that YouTube and Google repeatedly ignored their request to take down the scam video. He said, "If YouTube had acted quickly,
this is going to get worse when you have really convincing deepfakes. It's going to get even worse. I mean, this is a problem that companies like YouTube and Twitter, any of these platforms. This is a big problem. And you know, not only are they dealing with what happened with the Twitter hack." You know, you're dealing with this. And so, this is bad.
Sorry. There's a weird disconnect here between how fast content gets taken down by some owner of a music or a video copyright that thinks it's not for you. It happens immediately. And then when these people complain These are high profile individuals, right? Barack Obama, Elon Musk. Oh, this that's the Twitter part of it. But
it was Musk and Gates and Woz, yeah.
Yeah, Wozniak complains.
Nothing. Months.
Nothing.
In fact, Woz's lawyer said it's exactly the same thing. Twitter took it down in minutes.
If you're a lawyer for a washed-up 70s musician, you get heard immediately.
Yeah.
But if you're, even though all the person is doing is promoting your product.
Yeah. At the end of Windows Weekly 2 weeks ago, Paul mentioned White Lion.
Right. And Leo's like, what's White Lion?
I had no idea.
We played a song.
It's a song. I played a little clip of it. The whole video got taken down.
You should play it now, because I don't think these guys know what it is.
You're trying to get me taken down. And it's like, if I were White Lion, I'd be saying, yes, please, play more. Exactly.
Nobody has listened to our music since like 2003.
Maybe you'll sell an album or two.
First instance.
Just send an invoice. Like, that's why I was like, just send an invoice.
Well, they have an option.
You can do it as a gift. It's fine.
They have an option in these takedowns. You can say, just monetize it or remove their monetization or
remove
make
the monetization.
Or monetize it for me. Put a link to my album in there. But their choice was, for some reason, take it down.
Well, you know, it's not them, right? It's some idiot in a law office in, you know, Los Angeles or whatever.
Maybe they don't want to remember that time in their lives.
Could be. My hair
was White Lion, we will promote your music when it makes sense. You don't listen to Leo. We got this.
We got this. What was the name of the song?
Wait.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about it in the context of waiting for Windows 10 2004.
So it reminds me of this White Lion song I used to know when I was, you know, 30 years younger.
Wow.
Leo said, I've never heard of White Lion.
So apparently YouTube listens to White Lion's request to take it down.
Somewhere, a lawyer's ears went up.
Boom.
Said, oh, no.
How is it that, here's a question. Okay, so copyright-wise, like, we're talking about infringement, IP infringement, things like that. Why is a public figure likeness not considered the exact same thing, right? So it's like, literally, if somebody files an infringement claim and says they're using my likeness, why wouldn't that be taken down immediately, just the same as they're using my music or they're using my...
The difference is that the fingerprinting they do for music is automated and completely instantaneous. It's just matching.
And I don't think they have
They should.
Figures.
Maybe they should.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, this is more of a manual process. So instead of taking seconds, it takes months because humans.
Yeah, it just seems like a thing that it seems like a thing YouTube should have been working on for ages.
Yeah.
Right. So like if he is, oh, well, hey, if we're going to do this for music and we're going to do this for, you know, whatever, video games, like if you're going to make these digital thumbprints or prints that you can match up and then say, yeah, this is an infringement. Like, why would you not do that? Especially with deepfakes coming up.
Oh, it's going to be really bad.
Why would you not do that immediately? Yeah. Like, why would you not be working on that with, like, MIT or, you know, something along those lines to say, okay, like, we're going to protect against deepfakes by doing this thing on YouTube where, you know, if someone uploads an image of a person and they put in a copyright strike, like, we're going to take it down.
Woz said,
barring investigation.
In the complaint, he said, YouTube, like Google, seems to rely on algorithms and no special effort, requiring custom software employed quickly in these cases of criminal activity. If a crime is being committed, you've got to be able to reach humans capable of stopping it. Apparently, Google has no humans. So I think this lawsuit has
again,
merit.
It depends on the kind of complaint you're making. Because for some reason, if a lawyer representing an artist contacts YouTube, those things are taken down immediately.
Right.
And they're often, and the thing they're complaining about is almost always fair use. It's not someone has uploaded a song.
Yeah.
It's literally a musician talking about how they made the song or someone reviewing a movie or whatever it might be. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Let's take a little break. That's Paul Thurrott, the king of grumpy.
Of 80s pop rock.
Of 80s pop rock, of White Lion. And he is, of course, the host of Windows Weekly and Fast Ring. What is it? Fast Ring Daily?
Jeez.
I get it wrong every time.
First Ring. Thank
first
you.
Ring. It's first
thank
and
you
it's
fast.
Thank
remembering that there is one.
And, of course, therot.com is a great site. And we see him every Wednesday right here. Harry McCracken, the technologizer, doing great stuff at Fast Company. Are you going to be able to go in? You're not going to be able to go into places, are you?
Not right now. You mean in terms of reporting?
Yeah, like that great ATAP story or the IBM story.
I'm working on a big story right now for this fall that I will probably do entirely from my home office and on the phone and via Zoom and so forth. And it's doable, but it's not as fun.
No.
And there's certainly, if you're talking about hardware, it's less satisfying.
Yeah. I have to say, though, I'm really grateful to Fast Company that they are doing what my friend Stephen Levy used to call slow journalism. They're letting you do big pieces, big, long reads.
I like that it said long read ahead of your articles, you know.
Nice. Luckily for us, kind of the more TLC we give stories, the better they tend to do.
Good. That's really great. That's really great. It's good to have you. And it's so fun to see Ashley Esquetha again, senior producer at CNET. Tell me about the videos you're doing over there.
Gosh, we're doing all kinds of stuff. So I recently did, back in, I want to say April or May, we did the, we ranked just about every streaming service.
That was good. And I've referred back to that over and over again. That was really well done.
Thank you. Yeah. That was a couple weeks of tearing my hair out and coming up with a scoring system.
Yeah.
But it was fun and I was really happy about it. And then, you know, we're developing some new stuff, which is exciting. I'm part of a kind of a move fast, break things.
Nice.
Creative dev team. We just had a series that I helped co-create go live called Hacking the Apocalypse, where the very excellent Claire Riley, which is one of my colleagues at CNET. This was before the germs came. She went out and traveled and learned about all kinds of things, like how to survive different apocalyptic scenarios. And so she went and visited nuclear bunkers, and she got into a little pod that's designed to protect people from tsunamis. She did all sorts of stuff. She is absolutely amazing. Kudos to her and Andy Altman and John Kim, who are the three main players who produced, wrote, edited, re-edited. Like, I mean, they really went in there and made this thing sing, and it's really exciting. So we're all really proud of it. So if you haven't seen it, you can check it out on CNET or YouTube, and you can also, I believe we're airing it on Pluto TV now.
Oh, nice!
Which is pretty awesome. Yeah,
that's really great. Yeah, this is this is a picture that you would put on your resume for the rest of your life.
Heck yeah! Look at how cool she looks.
She's standing in front of the vault.
She's just so great
in the Strategic Air Command vault in the mountain. I love that.
Yeah, she hosted. I bet they have a RAMAC in there. She helped write. She wrote just about everything. I mean, she is just.
I think the RAMAC is running our nuclear system. Wow, that's great.
Yeah, we're all very proud of it over at CNET. And like I said, if you haven't seen it, it would be great if you watched it and validated my choices as a creative. I would just appreciate that. And also just, you know, giving them the credit that's due.
Yeah.
Because they really worked so hard on this. My co-producer and I, Logan in L.A., came up with this idea in March of last year.
Wow.
So it's been a long time in production. And then, of course, when the pandemic hit, we had to kind of, there were some adjustments that team had to make. So they worked really hard, and it really shows in the end product, and we're really proud of it.
Did the folks from CBS come over and say, let me show you how to do TV, kid? Or do they give you a free hand?
I tell everybody that because I went to school for television.
That's your job, man.
That's my job.
I know how to do this stuff.
I will admit, I will say this. I will admit to being, so Logan is kind of runs our YouTube channel. He's our LA producer. I'm also a producer in LA, but I'm mostly on-air talent and like creative development and stuff. So we come from film and TV backgrounds. We went to college for it.
Nice.
You know, I interned at Jimmy Kimmel. So when I came to CNET, it was a lot of news people in video. And as opposed to now, where you see a lot of teams, video teams, both on editorial and elsewhere, are very much from the same backgrounds that Logan and I come from. So we've had to we are certainly guilty sometimes of being a little bit of
know-it-alls,
TV and film school snobs, and being like, well, this is not how you do production in film school. Like, so yeah, that's totally us. And apologies to any of my coworkers who are annoyed by that on a regular basis.
One more question. Did Claire actually get to go into this prepper bunker?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm going to watch this one.
She got to visit. It's, I mean, these episodes are amazing. She went to a cryogenics facility, and this woman runs it. She's part of the group team who runs it, went to a cryogenics facility. And there's a moment where they're interviewing, and she walks up to one of these massive canisters that apparently hold four human bodies in them. And she taps on it, and she's like, "This is my husband."
Oh my God.
Like, "Hey, Frank," like, or whatever. And it's just wild. Like, I mean, it's really wild. Highly recommend this. I mean, like, this series.
Oh, this is really, Alcor.
It is something.
They've been doing this forever. Yeah, I know Alcor. Yeah.
She goes to Alcor. She's like hanging out there. I mean, it is.
I'm just glad they're still around, because, you know, if you got your body frozen by Alcor 20 years ago, you know,
things are still going good, right?
You've been thawed out. Yeah, it could be they, you know. So I'm glad to know they're still around.
That's a canister for someone's head.
Oh, yeah. Because
like, if you just want your head frozen, you can do that.
Wait a minute. That canister looks just like my spaghetti pot.
It looks just like an Instant Pot, which is very scary.
It looks like it's all clad limited spaghetti pot with a big.
She talks about, like, some people are in here, and some people have, like, I think one person has a dog cryogenically frozen here.
It's
nuts.
You understand? This has to be kept frozen for at least a couple of thousand years from now, because we are really far off.
We're pretty far off. I mean, you gotta have. I hope you have a good savings.
She's got faith. This woman has faith.
She does.
Yeah, she believes. Is Disney's head there?
She's gonna go tap it.
Do they have Disney's head?
I hope so, yeah. Where's Walt Disney's cryogenically?
They won't. No one admits it. Yeah, it's all alleged. No one will admit it. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite urban legends.
Yeah. Go ahead, Harry.
I was tempted to bring up Walt, but I decided against it, so I'm glad you did.
Yeah. He was in that NC-57 camp.
That was Walt Disney's head in my spaghetti pot.
They had to put it back in real fast, like the refrigerator. They were just like, "Well, we can only take it out for a second. Then we got to put it back."
Oh yeah, we don't want her to thaw.
Don't leave that thing
don't
open.
Don't want her to thaw out.
I'm gonna tell you.
Oh my God.
But yeah, these are, so it is really. I mean, it's something. I like this. This series is just this team of people who worked on. I mean, I just helped create the idea and did absolutely nothing in active production because I went on maternity leave, and really it was this team.
There's the dog.
As our San Francisco office that did this. Yeah, the dog. There's
the dog frozen in the pot.
I mean, it is.
Oh,
it is
my
something.
God.
And I cannot express how impressed and excited I am for that team. And they really did work super hard.
Is there a cheap version of this where we could just go for 2 years and get rid of all the COVID stuff?
Oh, that's a good idea. I would do suspended animation let's get out of this decade, maybe. Just
sleep through the next couple of years at least.
Wow. Just like a short-term cryonics, like just a,
just a little sleep, not the big sleep.
Well, I'm trying to do it with vodka, but it's not working.
Skin maybe with like a cold gel laser. That seems good.
I have to feel like
come out looking younger than when you went in.
When Claire called and said, "Hey, we'd like to do a story on you, Alcor," they were like, "Yes, no one's called us in 30 years." Oh, thank you. We'd love to.
I'm sure they have a lot of stories about how all that was made. They traveled for a long time. Claire came from Australia. So she's Australian and now she lives here. She's here full time with us, which we're very grateful for because she's awesome. She traveled for, I want to say 10 weeks in last
that's
summer.
That's a lot of work to shoot.
It was a lot.
A lot of places to go. Well, let's take a break. Come back. We have lots more to talk about. But first, a word from our sponsor, Masterclass. Talk about beautifully shot video, teaching you everything from how to act with Morgan Freeman to RuPaul to Serena Williams to some of the best classes you've ever seen. I just finished watching Aaron Franklin of the Franklin Barbecue in Austin, widely considered the best Central Texas barbecue in the world. And I got my smoker and I was rapt watching Aaron teach me how to do it. These are some of the best experts in the world. Thousands of lessons as they share their stories, share their expertise with you. And, you know, it's not a watching a YouTube video. This is really fun. Learn Mexican cooking from Gabriela Cámara or learn how to negotiate with Chris Voss, garden with Ron Finley. The lessons are great. They're about 15 minutes long. There are downloadable materials. They're always adding new people. teaching you amazing things, from how to execute a perfect technique to a master's insight about their craft. There's something for everyone. You know, my new favorite, the one I've bookmarked to start watching, I can't wait. It's a whole lesson in politics from Karl Rove and David Axelrod. Axelrod was Obama's campaign guy, strategist. Karl Rove was W's campaign strategist. They're doing it together, which I think is adorable. And they, everything from how to find a candidate, how to prep the candidate, how to do opposition research. It is really, I can't wait to watch this. And I'm not, you know, get into politics or anything, but I just, the idea of watching these two of the best, most successful campaign strategists of all time talk about what they know. The sections include starting a campaign, assessing your candidate, researching your opponent, understanding the electorate, polling and focus groups. I'm always been how to use direct mail, how to create a slogan and a logo. There's 24 segments on this, identifying influencers, the end of the race. There's a great segment at the end, the state of politics. I think this is what you want with Masterclass. This is the best learning, beautifully shot, fascinating material. Forget watching another night of reality television. Learn something with Masterclass. Users give Masterclass an average 4.7 out of 5 stars. And of course, if you're not fully satisfied, they have a 30-day money-back guarantee on the annual all-access pass. You got to check it out. We've got a 15% discount right now if you go to masterclass.com/twit. Masterclass.com/twit. That's the all access passes every class. And it's what I recommend, because you're going to watch one and then go, I got to see this one. Oh, I got to see this one. And it's fun to have a variety of them ready to fire up. Martin Scorsese teaching you how to direct. Ron Howard teaching you how to direct. Annie Leibovitz teaching you how to do portrait photography. I mean, just the best. Masterclass.com/twit. For 15% off, there's Anna Wintour of Vogue talking fashion. Imagine that. I just think it's a great gift. It's something everybody loves. You deserve it too. Masterclass.com/twit.
You got to do a masterclass on reading ads, because that was good.
Doesn't it make you want to subscribe?
It does. I'm like, ooh, I'm going to go look.
Yeah, up. No kidding. So are you a TikToker, Ashley? You seem like you're a TikToker.
I'm a TikTok lurker.
TikTok
lurker. I love TikTok.
It's hard not to watch.
I love TikTok.
I actually had to get rid of it because it's so addictive.
It really is.
You just keep scroll.
My favorite thing is what, based on the videos TikTok shows me, I have an idea of what type of person TikTok thinks I am. And it is definitely not who I am. But TikTok
will be the judge
seems
of that. What was the?
What did they say?
Based on what
does
I
it
watch
think you
and
are?
What I subscribe to and what I like, TikTok is pretty sure that I'm like definitely a drag queen. I'm definitely. There's a lot of really. It's like very specific. I have a super niche, like Disney loving, which is true. That's true. Disney loving drag queen. Who also loves, like, I mean, it's like they know me. Like, they got me down. They know exactly what I like to see. So I'm impressed with that.
So wow. I feel like you ought to be creating TikToks, though. You'd be doing so well.
I know. I want to. I just am, man. It's these kids are so inspiring.
They're really
I see them
talented.
And it makes me feel inadequate. I'm like, yeah. I can't compete with this. Like, this is so good.
So I also think that you have to remember the algorithm is key. In fact, Ben Thompson of Stratechery had a great insight. He was comparing TikTok to Quibi. So Quibi is Hollywood's attempt to do short videos on mobile devices. And I think it's probably premature to say it failed, but it's it's as close to failing as you get. They spent...
No, I think you got it.
Yeah, they raised $1.75 billion. 3 months ago, they you know, big splash. They had big name celebrities doing high production value 7-minute shows, they had that special super secret sauce technology where you could rotate the phone and get vertical or horizontal, and it would be a different perspective. They have mysteries. They have reality. They have Chrissy Teigen as a judge, you know, and John Legend shows up.
There is some good, interesting stuff on Quibi.
Okay, I agree. I mean, but not enough to make you subscribe. So
no,
hundreds of thousands of people downloaded the app. Millions, I think, downloaded the app. According to Sensor Tower, at the beginning of this month, when the three-month free trial went out, of those millions, only 72,000 actually paid for it.
It's not a lot.
It's not enough, probably, to sustain it. I mean, they have a long runway, probably. They raised a lot of money.
And to be fair, I mean, look, part of this, I would not agree with the what was that quote where he's like, I blame all of this on the pandemic, right?
It's like, yeah,
that,
no,
that's not, no, sorry, no,
that could have been your reason for succeeding,
right? It certainly affected people's, I think, willingness to like be more accepting of it. And also, we're all at home and we all want to watch on our TVs, and so
and
I
you
think
couldn't, this, by the way, on Quibi,
that, yeah, until, not having a contingency plan,
right,
for television watching, I think really hurt them in a way. I guess, you know, maybe we just didn't all get our Samsung TikTok TVs. You remember that thing at CES where you're like, turn it vertical? You
can, oh, God, flip that, yes, TV. That was,
that's
silly,
like a Quibi TV right there. That's, yeah. They should have named it the Quibi TV.
So Ben had some really, I thought the insight was really good. He said, this is the Hollywood model, which is you spend a lot of money. You get the best talent possible. You do the best production you can. You get big name celebrities. You put out the best stuff you can. And the Hollywood model is most of them will flop, but enough of them will be big that they'll pay for all the rest. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. he said, compare that to the Silicon Valley model, which TikTok is an example of, where what you do, and YouTube did this too, is you just say to everybody, upload your video, as many of you
just
as possible.
Whatever.
And Facebook, to some degree, does the same thing. Just put everything on there, and then algorithmically, we'll watch which ones get watched, and we'll start to surface those, and algorithmically, we'll get better and better. And so of the millions of videos uploaded every day, you know, a handful will become very successful. That's a good model. That works so much better than the Quibi model, and it's why TikTok is so much more successful. And by the way, it's free.
It's free.
Although I'm sure they're making money. So TikTok has become the poster boy for xenophobia, for Sinophobia, for the Trump trade war. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, said we're looking seriously at banning TikTok in the United States. That would be a challenging thing to do, although there's the Council on Foreign Investment in the United States, CFIUS. There might be ways that they could say, because TikTok is a Chinese company, they could possibly, you know, this is untested in the courts, go to Google and Apple, say, you need to yank TikTok from your stores. And by the way, turn it off on every phone that's already got it. That's conceivable. I don't know if they'll do that or if this is just more saber rattling from Trump. But the folks at TikTok are taking it very seriously. Here's a story in Bloomberg from a couple of days ago. Katie Roof and Jiping Wang, combative TikTok founder, races to save app before Trump ban. And there are a number of strategies. One would be to sell it to American investors. Another would be to spin off a company. That would be the U.S. TikTok. The problem with that is one of the reasons TikTok succeeds is this: we can get millions of videos from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S., according to Bloomberg, is a relatively modest part of ByteDance's overall business. The TikTok app has been downloaded 165 million times in the U.S. compared to 2 billion times globally, including the Chinese equivalent. Now, India has banned TikTok, so that might take a big chunk out of those numbers. They also are looking at splitting ByteDance, the Chinese parent company, into a China, ByteDance China, and then ByteDance everywhere else, set up a global headquarters in the United States or the UK. But I guess, I don't know. The issue is there's a lot of concern the Chinese government might be influencing ByteDance. that they might be using the app for data collection. What are you laughing? You don't think that's...
I don't know. Have you looked at TikTok videos? Do you really see Chinese government involvement?
Like, this is the thing I'm very curious about. It's like, it's, you know, I get it, but also like, we're all stuck in our houses, so there goes your location data that you're, that you'd want. There's, I just feel like I'm all about, you know me, Leo, like I talk about privacy all the time, but it's like, what is the motivation here?
TikTok has in the past done things that apparently the Chinese government might have asked them. They banned videos about Hong Kong protests. They have in the past down... It's unclear whether the algorithm is doing this automatically or by human intervention, but if you're overweight in the past, they have kept your videos from getting to the top of the food chain.
Well, like, these are not the reasons that the that our government is saying they want to ban TikTok. Is that
The overweight thing we're completely okay with.
Yeah, we don't care if you're...
That part's fine.
That administration does not care.
Yeah. I think this is... I don't know, you know? Peter Navarro... So there's been Pompeo talked about banning them. Peter Navarro has talked about, who's I think our U.S. trade negotiator, talked about fining them. TikTok, I mean, this is a big deal. TikTok is the most valuable startup in the world at this point. $75 billion valuation. Actually, that was during its last official fundraising. In subsequent private fundraising, maybe valued as much as $140 billion. This is a very valuable company.
They're also talking about maybe like hiring 10,000 people in the U.S. They already have a CEO from here who they hired away from Disney. They're talking about giving lots of money to creators in the U.S. I'm not entirely sure how any of that would counteract any legitimate concerns about that, but
they know that
whether the concerns are legitimate or not.
If you say we're creating jobs in the U.S., that sharpens the blow, right? 10,000 new jobs. We're a job creator. I mean, people kind of know what buttons to push with the Trump administration. Apple did dedicated a whole web page to creating, what did they say, like 2.5 million jobs, some ridiculous number. And the reason is they included everybody who'd ever written an app for iOS as a job. But they know that that carries a lot of weight in Washington.
And they are the first that I can think of Chinese software experience that's become really important in the U.S.
That's right.
And, I mean, things like WeChat have dabbled with this country and never gotten very far because what WeChat offers is hugely popular in China and is kind of almost the opposite of what people want here. And TikTok is something that has a lot of appeal no matter where it goes. And it's obviously one of the first real competitors that Facebook has. And now that TikTok's not available in India, Facebook has Reels, which is sort of a TikTok clone, which is available in India and taking advantage of that.
I think the thing I think about when I look at TikTok is the really endless creativity in people.
I can't compete with that.
In this kind of cool, short,
Chinese nature of it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it doesn't, I mean, at least what I'm looking at now, I'm not logged in, so I don't, this is just the generic stream on their website, is, in fact, you don't even see any Chinese people.
Right.
But it's very creative, and people are very talented and doing really interesting things.
Oh boy.
And see, this is why I don't have it on my phone. I can't. Now, what you're not getting, because I'm not playing the music, because I don't want us to get taken down by some third-rate lawyer for some cheesy 70s band. So what you're really missing is this is all lip-synced or synced to music, popular music tracks.
To the song Wait. Every video. Yes,
everything is synced to White Lion. Wait. Yep. It's all Wait. There's a cow waiting. All right. Well, I could play. This has original sound.
No.
It's a cow.
Oh, just got banned in India.
See, but here's the thing. Like, so when it says original sound, it's an original sound created by that creator, as in they they recorded somebody else's music and uploaded it.
Right.
So just be, yeah.
And like then.
It's not an original sound. It's just that then, is where the sound came from.
Oh, I see. So it's not Yay Four Cats. We don't know where the original sound is from.
Not make that sound, but guarantee that.
It's Yay Four Cats was the first to upload it.
Yes.
And then KVO 4242
used that song.
Used that song. And we don't know where the original. Yeah. And does the band get royalties for this? No.
Not that I'm aware of, no. I think there are some artists who have like agreed to allow their music to be used on
TikTok.
Why
wouldn't you? I mean,
yeah, see, well, and that's there's a lot of artists who have really like their music has blown up because of like a single, like Savage. Like that song blew up because of in a big part because of TikTok.
And well, didn't all Little Nas X, like Old Town Road, isn't that a TikTok hit?
Well,
I think so.
It's I mean, artists can benefit very greatly if one of their singles takes off on a service like that.
Right.
And somebody creates like a dance craze or, you know, whatever. And so, but it's, you know, it's like, again, like even if they're not being paid, it's like, you can't feed yourself with exposure. You know what I'm saying? So it's a fine line to walk.
Well, I just can't stop scrolling. So I'm just going to keep watching my TikToks while you guys just do the news without me, will you?
This is horrifying.
It's even more horrifying when you see that it goes with Fergie's Fergalicious.
It's the best. I mean, it's such a weird place of like just... Everyone's such a delightful weirdo there. Like, I love it. It's too good.
And it doesn't in any way feel like this is a manipulative attempt by the Chinese government to turn us all into communists or anything.
That's how they get you.
Khrushchev only wishes he had TikTok.
That's right. First they steal their music, then they steal your soul.
You got to think that a lot of what's going on in Washington is people who never really saw TikTok or used TikTok talking to people who never really saw or used TikTok. And it's Chinese is all that really matters. And that's the whole conversation. You know, Peter Navarro is accusing them of information warfare.
Jeez.
Peter Navarro is
I don't know what to say.
Peter Navarro is the guy who made up a expert source who he quoted in his books, who was actually an anagram of his own name. So I wouldn't put too much stuff in his viewpoint.
That is awesome.
Here he knows what's up.
He says he expects the president to take strong action against TikTok and WeChat for engaging in information warfare against the United States. See, that paragraph is not aimed at anybody who's ever used TikTok because they would, as we just did, they go, what?
Right. It's crazy.
No.
And then, by the way, Navarro's.
Right when you mentioned xenophobia.
It's xenophobia and really cynophobia. And Navarro says if TikTok separates as an American company, that doesn't help us because it's going to be worse. We're going to have to give China billions of dollars for the privilege of having TikTok operate on U.S. soil. You are going to give them billions of dollars?
Big rich people tax cuts? Or like, I have so many questions so many times when
I don't even want to do this story, except I feel like what will happen is, you know, one day they're just going to ban TikTok and we're all going to say, what?
That mouthpiece of the communist government of China has finally been silenced.
As you
dancing
mentioned.
Dancing chickens and the.
Yeah. Dancing whatever. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, Harry, TikTok is now doing a $200 million creators fund for I don't know what people to make silly videos. I guess it's very interesting. Let's see. I think we did the. There's nothing more to say about the Twitter hack. We've been talking about that for a week and a half now. I think it's over. Twitter's earnings are out. They didn't have a very good quarter. Ad revenue down 23%. They missed expectations. They did see growth in users. But, man, I mean, your ad revenue down 23% doesn't bode well. Oddly enough, the stock market rewarded them with an increase of 4.1%.
The law. What would a Twitter subscription look like? That's one of the things
they're now saying. They're now saying it, and Jack's admitting it because we had that story last week, but it was based solely on job postings. But now Jack is saying, "Yeah, no, we're thinking of it's one of many things."
What would I be paying
premium
for?
Premium features, right? Like less editing hate? Tweets. Let me pay $5 a month.
I would
edit
pay to
my
edit
tweets within 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Of tweeting it, like even just that, like a little short window of time, like unsending an email, if I could just have that feature where I
you don't
just
like
unsend
you don't
a
like
tweet.
Having people tell you about typos and tweets.
I just hate when I do it and then I see the tweet immediately after I post it and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Now I got to copy this and I got to read this and then by the time you do all that, some people have already seen it and retweeted it and you're just like, man, do I just let it live?
That's why you can't edit it. That's why you can't edit it, because it lives.
That's what I'm saying. Unsending it. Like would be, I guess
but
you
how
can
you
delete
do
it,
that?
But it's like, I wouldn't mind being able to edit it within, like nobody can favorite or retweet
that's
something
it.
For
it's not sent
30
to
seconds.
You. Yeah, that's the way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would pay to be able to upload longer videos. I often want just a little bit more time than 240 seconds or whatever it is.
Yep. There you go.
Premium features.
Interesting.
Be nice.
Also maybe pay for longer tweets.
Yeah. No sponsored ads. Like that would be cool. Like,
ad free
nice.
Would not
be
bad.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Yeah.
Ad free Twitter experience. I'd pay for that.
Yeah. Can I just get rid of that entire third column, whatever that is? Because whatever you're recommending, I never want it.
No. Sponsored. Yeah. I don't want that. So yeah, I'd be willing to pay for that.
I mean, clearly Twitter understands there's value in Twitter. And the challenge is how do you extract that as Twitter? How do you extract that value?
And some of the like the tweet deck type stuff seems like it could be.
I would pay if they
pay for
premium features or like power user features would be something I'd subscribe to.
Yeah.
An inline tweet delete feature. Like I'd pay a little extra. Like you pay tweet delete now if you want to delete old tweets, just get rid of them on a regular basis. You know, I'd pay for that. Like I'd pay for an actual, you know, first party service. I would. You know, if I subscribed and had like a premium subscription that deleted my tweets on an interval that I chose, like that would be nice.
There you go. Well, we'll see. There, oddly enough, the stock price went up, although earnings were down. We have a record of what happened last week on TwitWatch.
Previously on Twit.
You got books. You're really.
I have
you
a
got
plant.
A plant. There.
I think she needs a moose.
That's Jeff Jarvis, by the way.
And interior decorator.
Twit News.
And we're getting ready to sit back and enjoy some games.
These are going to be first party games, Xbox exclusives.
I don't know what to say. It looks just like, Halo.
Yeah.
I guess you have a franchise like Halo, you don't want to change it too much.
All about Android.
Joining us today, Dave Burke, who is the VP of Engineering for Android at Google.
If desserts were still around, where would we be right now? It being, I believe, R.
If you were to ask an engineer on my team, what are they working on? They would say RVC. And so RVC is red velvet cake.
Windows Weekly.
Slack has announced it's filing a complaint against Microsoft and the EU because they don't like that Microsoft is, quote, tying Teams to Office 365. And they feel like that's blocking them from being chosen as a best of breed technology.
The news that, I guess we can't compete, we're going to have to file an antitrust complaint, might signal to potential customers, to potential investors, that this company is not going to make it.
Twit. Friends don't let friends miss Twit.
I do want to talk about the Slack thing because you were irate. You were pissed. But we have to take a little break. We'll come back. Also, Wither Intel. There's lots more. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. Your IT department has a tough job right now. More devices, applications, people working from home. New threats, new regulations, strong security, getting more complicated than ever. Thank goodness. LastPass provides your IT department with strong security that's easy to use and manage. LastPass lets you secure every entry point from shadow IT to apps to mobile and cloud services. Their access solutions give you visibility and control over every access point to your organization. You can unify access and authentication. Employees access a variety of applications and devices, but that can lead to a lack of visibility. You can't really see what your users are doing from application to application or device to device unless you use LastPass. LastPass Identity offers a simple and integrated view across all access and authentication tests. IT will know who's accessing what, when, and where, and that's really important, especially with employees working from home. And the beauty part of LastPass is you get increased security without impacting productivity. It doesn't slow down employees. It doesn't hurt productivity. It actually makes their job easier. So they're more likely to want to use it. Single sign-on, as an example, is so much better than passwords. Makes it easy to sign on. Employees love it, and yet it's more secure. It's kind of LastPass does the thing that's the hardest in security. It makes it more secure and easier. And, of course, it's the best password manager out there. Passwords are entryways into businesses. You can't be using sticky notes and spreadsheets to keep track of them. You need LastPass's secure vault, decrypted and encrypted only at the device level. The password, the master password, is never sent to LastPass. Only your employee knows it. They don't store it. It works on every device you've got, iOS, Android, Mac, Windows, Linux, every browser known to man. And your data is always secured with the strongest 256-bit AES encryption, the same used by banks and the military. It's as secure as you can get. Protect your business and your IT department with the tools you need to keep your business safe with LastPass. LastPass.com/twit. Find out how they can help you stay productive and secure. LastPass.com/twit. Here we are in the beautiful LastPass studio. I'm the only one here, but we thank you, LastPass. You wrote us.
They're in spirit.
They're here in spirit. Speaking of the IBM, deserted IBM facility, you wrote a piece, Paul, called "The End of an Era at Intel." How long before we see a disused cafeteria with lawn chairs? Yeah. And
I'm nervous about Intel. This is a company that just actually posted stellar earnings. Their business is not quite equally split between PCs and data centers. They literally fabricate their own chips, which has always been kind of a competitive advantage.
Although there's been a little drumbeat that they may stop doing that.
And that's the story, which is Bob Swan during the post-earnings conference call, which I missed. I caught this late. Said someone asked, would you consider outsourcing TSMC or whatever? He said, yeah, that's a contingency plan for sure.
Because TSMC has a 7-nanometer process.
Oh, by the way, has 6 they're about to launch and has 5 they're about to launch in the foreseeable future too. So, yeah, this is...
And Intel, for some reason, they had trouble with 10 and now they're having trouble with 7. They say we're not...
They're still having trouble with 10, by the way. They still haven't completed that transition.
Why is it important? You better explain this. Why is that number important?
The nanometer number. It really speaks to the efficiency of the chips, and this is the problem. So as computing has gone mobile for end users and data centers have gone to the cloud, what we're looking for is that power per watt. It's the power efficiency number. And this is Intel has always been, they're the megahertz guys, right? I mean, they're really good at pumping up the power of individual chips. They're not good at bringing them down to smaller die sizes and making them more efficient. And
they're not essentially taking advantage of Moore's Law.
Well, yeah, Moore's Law is...
It's over.
It's over. Thanks, Intel.
Well, but it's not over for TSMC.
Well, Moore's Law is a moving target. It's certainly changed over the years, but... Yes, I mean, the problem is Intel is about to be subsumed by, we'll just call it ARM, because I don't know what else to call this, but those types of chips are more efficient, and they are obviously ideal for a data center, which is, you know, roughly half of Intel's business, and personal computing, of course, has gone mobile, and, you know, off the top of my head, I mean, there are probably 10 times as many mobile devices. Is that right? That's probably maybe an exaggeration. Right. 8 times as many mobile devices sold each year as PC, something like that. I don't think Intel's going to give up the PC anytime soon, but they're going to be the last company standing there. And that's not the business you want to bet your future on.
I have been, you've finally come around to my way of thinking, Paul. I've been beating this drum for a while.
Well, Leo, I have to disagree with you because look, the future, I've long felt like the future is open, you know, for one thing, and that's kind of maybe a software approach. But yeah, you can see what's happening out in the broader world with regards just to personal computing. I mean, it's not, you can't ignore it. I mean, it's happening.
So Intel now says their 7-nanometer process, which is already delayed, it's already more than a year behind, won't be out till 2022 or 2023.
Yeah. By the way, that's Intel speak for 2024 or 2025.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like their apparently the yields are not good for their process. Yeah. He says they identified a defect mode in its 7-nanometer process that caused yield degradation issues. Basically, they are just struggling at this point. Now, admittedly, Apple abandoning Intel chips doesn't, it's a small fraction of their business, doesn't it? Affect them on the
bottom
line.
But it is indicative, you know, Apple as a company that, well, look, they're concerned about control here, but that Apple is able to make this transition now is astonishing. And they see the future. I mean, they're wrapped up in that future. They are very much a post-PC company. Their devices business is much bigger than their Mac business. So, you know, moving the Mac to Apple Silicon or, you know, an ARM type chipset is a big news story.
Undoubtedly be a 7-nanometer or less process.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, the Windows world, we feel the pain of this particular announcement in a whole new level because, you know, we've been struggling with Windows 10 on ARM for a few years now. Yeah. But, yeah, I the world's changing. There's no
Sam,
doubt about it.
Abul Samad was talking about Intel a little bit. We were talking about chips on the radio show. He's the car guy. And he did point out that while NVIDIA and other companies have done very well in automotive, Intel at least has an automotive play. Perhaps.
Okay. Do they?
Do they? I don't know.
I don't know. NVIDIA, by the way, makes almost as much money from data centers as they do from graphics and PC.
That's right.
Their business, like Intel's, has gone in an interesting direction.
Story is the rumor, and it's only rumor, that NVIDIA is thinking of acquiring ARM. SoftBank is either putting ARM up for sale or something. They need cash after their flop with WeWork.
I don't understand how NVIDIA could afford it. This is a company that I think they generate about $3 billion in revenues a quarter. I mean, it's not – there are probably only a few companies that could afford to buy ARM that would want it, you know. Right. Apple's not going to do it. They could, obviously. Microsoft's not going to do it. Intel – I mean, you could make a case for Intel buying them.
Actually, that's not a bad idea.
You know.
You quote an analyst, Chris Rowland.
Yeah, that's a great quote, too.
Yeah, who says, with the latest push out of process technology, we believe Intel has zero to no chance. That's, by the way, the same. Zero to no chance of catching or surpassing TSMC, at least for that next half decade, if ever.
Yeah. And this is the volume. I don't have an exact number on Intel. It's in the hundreds of millions. But, you know, that's the difference between a business that ships primarily to what we'll call low volume markets, data center / PC versus high volume markets in mobile. Billions, you know.
Wow.
It's just a sad story for American manufacturing, given that Intel was American manufacturing story for 50 years. So regardless it's very bittersweet for me, regardless of whether the devices that come out are better or worse or whatever. It would be nice to see Intel flourishing. Right. And the era has been ending. I mean, at least ever since the smartphone became a big thing and Intel tried to make smartphone processors and failed.
So, yeah, Harry, does AMD at least show that maybe x86 has some life left in it? Or
yeah, and then Intel is also dealing with, you know, AMD, which is resurgent and doing well. So it's not, they even have meaningful competition in the PC area these days.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
AMD doesn't make their own chips.
No.
So, I mean, AMD, right. They must use, do they use the TSMC or a TSMC?
They spun out their manufacturing and it became Global Foundries.
Oh, Global Foundries, yeah. That's right, yeah.
I mean, Intel did this famous thing back in the late 70s or early 80s. At one point, they were doing a lot of memory chips, and it was really successful for them, but they decided the future was not memory chips, and they bet everything on microprocessors shut down the memory stuff, even when it was doing well. And I kind of wonder, is there like a big bet Intel could make today that would be the equivalent for that? And part of it might be kind of acknowledging that the future is not in being quite so vertically integrated.
Actually, and this is a little scary, AMD is fabbing a lot of its chips now at TSMC, not GlobalFoundries.
Okay, that's what
so
I thought. Yeah. That's probably how they're hitting 7-nanometer.
Yeah, of course, that's how they get it. Yeah, these guys know how to do it. I've heard those people say, I don't know anything about this, that 5 and 7, as described by TSMC, isn't the same as 5 or 7 described by Intel, that their metrics are...
Yeah, you're talking about like node density and...
Yeah. So they can't compare head to head, really.
You know, except we're going to compare it, and right. Fortunately for
we're
Intel,
do it anyway,
it just looks bad.
This was Harry, you probably have your finger, maybe Ashley, on the pulse of future technologies. I saw this story in the Washington Post, and I thought, what the heck? It's a picture of the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot. And the governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, at an announcement, U.S. and officials and scientists unveiled a plan on Thursday to pursue what they call one of the most important technological frontiers of the 21st century, building a quantum internet. They had a professor from University of Chicago's Pritzker School of Molecular Engineering and senior scientist at Argonne National Laboratory called the Internet Project a pillar of the nation's quantum research program. It's a birth of a new technology. Oh, and it will be, by the way, hacker-proof, they say. This all sounds really good until I got to the sentence that maybe you can explain this to me. Maybe I'm just ignorant. Quantum computers are still in an early stage of development, not yet as powerful as classical computers, but connecting them via an internet could help accelerate their use for solving complex problems. The networks promise to be more secure, some even say unhackable, because of, hand waving here, the nature of photons and other quantum bits known as qubits. And my favorite part was, when they said that devices on this quantum internet will be able to talk to each other using something called quantum entanglement without being connected in any way. What? Is that magic? I think that's magic. They're not connected.
Clark's third law, but that aside.
It seems impossible. Oh, and by the way, the reason it's not hackable, this is another good one, is the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. If you snoop on the traffic going on in the quantum network, it changes. So you can't hack it because you can't look at it.
It seems like a really raw idea right now. Especially given the state of quantum computing in general. Then again, the internet got going in 1969, and it was a very raw idea back then. And it sounds like the notion for the quantum internet is it would start as something for military applications and academia. I think over the next few decades, it's a totally logical idea. That article you mentioned, I think, also says that nobody is really sure who's going to pay for this right now.
Well, we know that the Energy Department is investing $500 to $700 million a year with more to come. So it's my guess that these guys are going, we can invent this. Just give us some more money.
I'm not entirely clear why you couldn't just sort of connect quantum computers over the internet more or less as we know it.
And right.
I think that would be more secure just given the ability of quantum computers to do encryption at a level that classical computers can't do.
This is, maybe it's the Washington Post and it's, difficult reporting, and I'd love to know more, and I was hoping somebody would explain it to me. For instance, they say that they've built a 52-mile quantum network, and that's going to extend to 80 miles, and then in New York there's an 80-mile quantum network. But at the very next paragraph, they say a key piece of hardware called a quantum repeater still needs to be developed, invented, to amplify the signal over long distances. Right. So it's my guess they've got quantum computers over a standard network, not a quantum network, because they don't have a repeater yet.
Right. I think, I mean, Harry has it right, where this is stuff that's decades away, I would imagine. I think my biggest concern is, I mean, I agree with the, you know, if you really want to make things a little more hacker-proof, like, sponsor encryption bills.
Yeah, there you go.
Sponsor encryption bills.
There you go.
We have existing technology that can, yeah. That can help keep hackers out of things.
There you go.
Sponsor encryption bills, you know, be pro encryption. But on that same note, like I think the thing that I also have concerns about, or that I would have concerns about whenever this happens, is when we originally developed the internet, it didn't exist before. And now we're talking about two different kinds of internet, and it seems like one will be maybe a little harder to access for people of lower income, people of lower means, people in more rural areas.
You can't use the
areas.
Quantum internet. No.
And the thing is now you're creating...
You gotta have the slow internet.
Now you're creating two different classes of information available to people. And that I have a problem with that.
Everything else aside, of a second internet defeats the purpose of the internet.
The internet. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I mean, it's like, great, like, cool, quantum computing. Like, I'm all about that. Like, let's move forward. I love progress. But I was tweeting about it this morning. I get very frustrated when I read about technology or computer science programming or any startup that does not consider the worst intentions of the worst people when they build products. They think, oh, it's going to be great. Like pie in the sky. Like, oh, this is going to be so amazing.
It's going to
bring people together. It's going to be hacker proof. It's here are all the great things it's going to do. And they don't consider how that can be weaponized to exclude groups of people, to give disinformation to groups of people.
Yeah. It's all about the TikTok. Will there be TikTok on this center?
Are we
going to
weaponize TikTok?
Is there going to be TikTok?
TikTok?
That's the thing that really frustrates me. Is it's like, yeah, you're talking about creating two different internets, and you think that's not going to affect a group of people, whoever it may be, that will not have access to it. Like, it absolutely will. And these companies just, you know, we have this issue in computer science where we just that is not constantly hammered into a curriculum, either in a learning institution or outside of a learning institution in private companies. There's ethical ramification to the product that you build, and you have to really think about these things. And you have to, you know, not to say always think like an evil person, but it's like there are people out there who want to use products, whether it's tech or analog products, to do bad things. And you have to consider those use cases when you are building this stuff.
Thank you. Good. And I don't want to dash cold water on this exciting idea of the magic.
Oh, I can do it.
You don't want to put cold water all over the protons?
No. It could very well be that this article is just the person who wrote it didn't have any idea.
Nobody has any idea what they're talking about when it comes to quantum computing.
It strikes me that nobody does. Yeah.
That's Microsoft. Not a silly thing to talk about.
Yeah, it's just it almost doesn't exist, basically. I mean,
well,
a couple years ago,
There are quantum computers.
No, I know the milestones are reached. There are announcements that are made. I went through a presentation that Microsoft had a few years ago. Had a half an hour meeting with those guys. Sat down, started writing my article. Everything you need to know about quantum computing. Was the title, and the first sentence said, is an article I would love to write, but I have no idea what they're talking about. You know, and it's beyond me. I literally don't understand it.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm just, I'm being left behind by the magic of computers
that
can talk without being connected, and hackers. Yep. That can't see information because it changes the minute they see it.
Magic of the Qubits is definitely going to be the name of my next synthesizer.
I like it.
project, right? The magic of the qubits.
The dance of the qubits.
The magic my new, of the that's qubits. Also my new Xbox game. My new Xbox Series X game. Magic nice. Of the qubits. The qubits.
Yep.
All right, we got some stories. I want to talk about streaming. Peacock is out. I want to see if you want to update your streaming reviews. Ashley Esquetha's here from CNET, senior producer over there. Paul Thurrott from Windows Weekly and Thurrott.com and the technologizer, Harry McCracken. This portion of the show brought to you by Zendesk. You use Zendesk. You are already a Zendesk user. You just don't know it because so many of the biggest companies in the world use Zendesk to improve customer relations, for remote support, to keep customers happy. Some of the biggest companies in the world use Zendesk. Some things are a little weird right now. Admit it. It could be hard to keep up with what matters most to your business. The answer is always customers. Zendesk is here to help. Right now, they're offering, I love this, a six-month absolutely free remote support bundle. All the essential tools your team needs to stay agile, keep connected with customers via whatever way customers want to communicate, email, phone, chat, community forum, help center, social media. You'll set it up in hours, not weeks. You'll get it up and running, and it's free for 6 months. Just to help you right now when you need it most. Zendesk was created with a simple idea. Make customer service software that's easy to use and accessible to everyone with a single dynamic help desk interface. It's easy and quick to implement, but it's very flexible, so it will change as your needs change. Use it right out of the box. Configure it to your exact needs with apps or integrations. It's used by every company and every size, from startups to large enterprises. And the beauty of Zendesk is if you're a small startup, it will scale with your growth to make sure that powerful, innovative customer experiences are within reach, no matter how big or small your company is, no matter what industry, no matter what your ambition. The director of client-facing experience and analytics at Homebridge, they use Zendesk, Ben Chapman, says having all the customer data in a single place helps us to achieve a high and consistent level of customer satisfaction. We can collaborate better, and we have the visibility to see and report on everything. Zendesk also improves security by allowing us to control access to sensitive content. So Zendesk is a complete suite of tools, and I love it. Free for 6 months. Free for 6 months, the remote support bundle. It works nearly everywhere. They have more than 150,000 customers across hundreds of industries in over 30 languages. As I said, you've used Zendesk. You may not know it, but you have. Look, the customer journey differs for every company, for every business, for every industry. No matter what you need, Zendesk products are flexible enough to have a solution for you. They can pave the path that's best for your organization. Customers come first. And when customers come first, Zendesk is right there for you. Zendesk.com/twit. Get started with that six-month remote support bundle absolutely free. That's the best offer we have. Zendesk.com/twit. Zendesk helps you change with the times. Space Force, not the Netflix TV show. The actual Space Force logo is here. It does not look as much like the Star Trek logo as it did. They probably took some feedback. But they do have a motto, Semper Supra, which doesn't mean we're always driving Toyotas. It means always
the Supra.
Semper the Supra. It harks back, of course, to the Marine Corps slogan, Semper Paratus, always prepared. Or is that the Boy Scout motto? I can never remember. Semper Supra means always above, because they're always above. They're always up there. Space above Force.
Your personal zenith.
Yep. Just thought I'd pass it along. TechCrunch says that the original Space Force logo revealed in January, which looks like the Starfleet's logo, is actually the seal for the Space Force branch of the military. They say this new logo is the simpler one for the organization as a whole. They say you could tell them apart because this one looks more like the Pontiac logo.
Nice. Well, but they're not using it anymore. It's okay.
No, this is the one they're using, the Pontiac logo.
No, I mean
logo.
Pontiac. They're not using it.
Oh, that's right.
Logo.
They don't need it. So, yeah, why not? Keep it alive.
Just make it red. It'll be perfect.
Wednesday's the day that the teddy bear picnic in on Capitol Hill. Mark Zuckerberg, Tim Cook, Jeff Bezos, Sundar Pichai will gather to testify before the House Judiciary Antitrust Subcommittee. I hope they stream that live.
Do you think they're going to break out into like a four-way, you know, flailing fight thing where they just
slap each other? Nut job. I always look forward to it because it's always so much fun to hear senators who have no idea what they're talking about.
Sure.
Actually, yeah. It's the House, but they're equally clueless. Say, yep. Help me again. How do I post on TikTok? Yeah. That would be fun.
Attach something in an email message, yeah. Mr. Zuckerberg. Yeah. Is that something you could help me
can
with?
Can you help me with that? Yeah. That will be fun.
My granddaughter says.
Yes. That's yeah. That's
can
the
you
line.
Help my print? Can you help set up my printer? Like that's, I mean, it's that. Ugh.
How can I tell which videos on TikTok are from the Chinese government?
Yeah.
Oh Lord. But they did get them. They got them all. The big four. They're showing up. That should be fun. I think you should get this chair, Ashley, for your woman cave. The Herman Miller X done. Logitech gaming chair, a mere $1,500. It glows, apparently.
I got to start a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
I've been using
it. Start the GoFundMe. I'm desperate. My back. I need a chair.
20 years. Yeah. They last.
It was designed. It's called the Embody Gaming Chair. It was designed with help from 30 physicians. I don't know why 30.
Looking for something that could satisfy the needs.
Second opinion. You're going to have your 30th opinion. I love a good 30th opinion.
There are 30 people. There's padding with copper-infused particles designed to cool off the body and pixelated support, which helps more evenly distribute the sitter's weight. And if it's a gamer, it's probably considerable.
Is there like a Cheetos bag that attaches?
It's a special Cheetos holder.
Kind of a trough that you can swing over?
A cup holder would be nice.
Oh, got to have a cup holder.
Be good.
Got to have a cup holder. Army, the U.S. Army, not going to be on Twitch.
No. They're still upset about Mixer?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're very, very upset.
There was, I didn't know
boycotting
this,
Twitch.
A recruitment-oriented Twitch channel. Okay. Of course, it's Twitch. So immediately people go in the chat room and ask, can I participate in war crimes? Is that part of the deal?
Ban. Sorry, I'm sorry. And we're worried about TikTok because of some kind of Chinese government thing? Like, seriously?
They're just jealous they didn't think of it first, right? Yeah. Like, that's what it is. They're mad because it doesn't belong to our government. That's what they're mad about, TikTok. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Esports.
Like, why didn't we think of that first?
Esports consultant and journalist Rod the Slasher Breslau said, due to recent media coverage of fake giveaways and potentially unconstitutional bans, the U.S. Army esports team has paused social activity streaming on Twitch and official activations with Twitch, including participating in upcoming Twitch Rivals events.
The Army has an esports team.
They're not going to resume any contact with humans until spring 2021. So
just like the rest of us.
Yeah, that's right. A CRISPR cow was born. The scientists spent years editing a sex-determining gene into bovine embryos. We can now tell you the story. In April, Cosmo arrived, and he's definitely a boy.
Mm-hmm. I have great news.
Yes.
For anybody who wants a boy cow. can, in fact, do that without gene editing.
A gene splicer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Might save you a couple bucks. Just, you can have that information for free.
Yeah.
Anybody out there looking.
Yeah. Now, if you got a quantum cow, that I want to hear about.
Cubic cow? Oh, boy.
Cubic cow. Pixelated can be in two cow? Places at once. So Peacock, 1.6 million downloads in the first week, 1.5 million.
Those are cute. Quibi numbers.
Those are Quibi. Them's Quibi numbers. It is free, right? Although there are paid tiers that give you various other things like no ads. Quibi got 1.2 million installs in the first week. So it's a little bit better than Quibi.
I think Morbid Curiosity was the Quibi thing, right? And also Peacock is missing a few things that are, you know, you would expect to see if you were downloading an NBC Universal streaming service. So if you download it, you're not going to see Seinfeld and you're not going to see Friends for a little while. Right. So yeah, there's a bunch of licensing stuff. It's all over the what is the deal with Peacock?
Disney Plus did get 12 million downloads in the first week. So,
Baby Yoda. That's people. I think people were really curious about that. And also, I mean,
wait a minute.
Disney Plus is a very specific use case, and I think a lot of people were ready for that streaming service that was like family oriented. Like they've really kind of cornered the market on that.
Now, one of the things you covered in your reviews is, of course, availability on various streaming platforms, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what I didn't realize, you just assume, well, it's not going to be on Roku.
It's everywhere. Not so.
Nope.
Not Amazon Fire.
No Amazon, no Roku.
Peacock also has had some weird problems with like not working over HDMI, and a friend of mine couldn't get it to work on his monitor. And some of the Peacock technical advice kind of said, like, well, watch it on some device other than your desktop PC if it doesn't work for you.
Oh, great.
I had this. So when I was filming, we did an app walkthrough of the Peacock app for CNET's YouTube channel. And when I was filming it, I was doing it on my PC using my Elgato Capture, and, you know, everything was fine until I actually wanted to play any content, or I went to the channels tab, which is like live channels, which are not necessarily like your traditional channels. They were like, oh, it's a channel for the Tonight Show or the Today Show or whatever. We're just constantly playing episodes. But I went to that, and yeah, I think it's HDCP, right? It's like preventing it.
Copy protection.
We don't want you to capture this stuff. So, right. I really struggle watching that stuff on my desktop, which is there's some issues there, which is not great.
So, is this just birth pangs, or is it going to clear up? For instance, are HBO Max and Peacock, are they going to be able to make a deal with Roku at some point, or who? And what's the problem? Is it money?
Yeah, they have to. They have to compete. I mean,
Does Roku want a big chunk of their revenue? Is that why?
I could not begin to speculate as to why NBC Universal was like, I don't think two of the bigger set-top boxes are good ideas. Because obviously they're giving a cut to Apple. It's on Apple TV. So
30%, right?
I really can't. I can't imagine why they thought it was a good idea to launch without support for especially those two devices, especially like Roku and Apple Fire TV, which tons of people have and prefer over Apple TV, for example. And so it is a little short-sighted, I guess. I'm sure it probably has something to do with the fact that there's like, you know, lawyers involved in negotiating and deal. Like, I'm sure there's something going on there that I'm just not privy to.
Disney did everything right, and none of these other guys have done everything right so far. I think partially because it's really hard to do everything right. Yeah. And Disney really kind of bet the company on this in a way that these other companies are not doing so far.
Well, good for, that just shows you.
Like, I would imagine that 1.6 million downloads would be, I don't know, maybe triple that had they launched on two of the other biggest platforms. Like, it seems like a big misstep for launch, but... You know, people who are streaming are not reading these articles, right? This is like very inside baseball. They don't care about how Peacock's doing. They'll just go download it whenever whenever they remember it exists or it is in their face, and then they go, "Oh yeah, I'm just going to use this." Like, I don't think this number will affect anybody's willingness to download it in the future.
Mostly, at least if I use myself as an example, it just comes down to, is there a show I want to watch? Okay, right. I want to watch it. What do I need to watch it? Oh, I need Peacock. And then I'll download it and install it and maybe even pay for it if I don't want to watch the ads.
Yeah, I do think it is very smart that they launched with a free option.
Yeah.
That's good, brilliant, because it gets everybody into that ecosystem, right? And then you have, and then they launch originals. They have some originals, but obviously with the pandemic, they weren't able to finish a lot of the production on some of the later produced shows. So they'll have more originals next year. And as time goes on, you're going to see them once those licensing agreements end with Netflix or where whoever they might have them with. They are absolutely going to start keeping exclusives on their properties in app. So it's over time, there's just going to be more and more reasons to be a subscriber to Peacock, whether that's on the free level or to pay for, you know, a little more content and ads, or you go to the top tier, which is $10 a month. And it's no ads, but they actually have an asterisk there where it says, actually, there will be some stuff because of agreements we have with other production companies that there has to be ads on them for the time being. So you may see a couple of ads here or there, but generally speaking, it will be a no ad experience.
At this point for the consumer, it feels like a Jenga game where we're just taking one, adding one more brick, adding one.
Too many.
I'm just waiting.
Too many services.
Like, they keep adding these, and I feel like at any minute, the whole thing's just going to crash to the ground.
Well, this is what we asked for, right? Like, it's a be careful what you wish for.
Is this what we asked for? Is it really?
Yeah. Because if you think about it, back in the 90s, early 2000s, when everybody was paying, you know, ridiculous amounts of money for cable bundles, it became, well, why can't I just buy this channel? Why can't I just buy this channel? Why can't I just pay for this?
Well, to be fair, what we really wanted is, why can't I just buy this show? We want a complete disaggregation.
Right. And you can do that. Sure. That's the thing. You can do that. You can pay your $35 and buy your show for a season. Right. But most people would rather have this subscription where you have access to more stuff. And this is what people thought they wanted. And now we're seeing kind of a return to a bundle, these like sort of skinny bundle systems. Like, you have your Philos.
This is actually worse than cable TV, though, right? Because at least the cable TV, you had too much to watch, but it was all in one interface. Now there's too much to watch, but they're all in different apps.
You have to figure out which app.
You can't switch between shows on different apps. Yeah. You have to manually switch out, load the other, wait till it comes up, choose the profile, go in. You know, it's so fragmented and
it's very
confusing.
Fragmented.
And like Ashley said, you know, you don't know what the deals are with people. You know, if I want to watch Seinfeld, where is Seinfeld this week? Is it, was it on Netflix for a little while? And now it's, isn't it on HBO or something? Why do I need to know stuff like that? I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. You shouldn't have to know those things. You shouldn't have to look up those things to be able to watch things that you like. You should be able to just search for something. Yeah,
when did TV become a career? You know, like I need to do research to figure out, you know, not just what we're watching, but where it is.
My colleague Jared Newman just recently did a good story on services like Real Good, which are trying to solve some of that by essentially being like a portal where they'll tell you where Seinfeld is and direct you there. And Real Good kind of becomes your hub. And the other things are more like satellite services.
You're stopping. Yeah, point,
I mean,
right,
Apple's trying to do this with Apple TV.
Apple is doing it.
Apple TV isn't bad. Apple doesn't have Netflix. Like, they're not terrible.
But it doesn't include Netflix. So that's kind of a big gap.
Well, that's the thing. You're right. There's always going to be this kind of problem. It's so, it's just
you
so terrible.
You have to have these services connected to whatever it is that you want it to give you search results for. And some of these companies are like, no, we don't need that. Just come over and open our app.
Are you going to redo your channel, your streaming review? And because it's all changed.
I want to do it every year.
Yeah, you got to do it every year. Changes constantly.
I did score Peacock early because it was in soft launch at the time.
Ah. What do you think? You like it?
I like it. I think I really like the categories it offers. I think some people are really turned off by them because they're extremely specific and niche, kind of like those really weird Netflix categories. But I am very curious. I think for me, over time, that trending tab, which is a very interesting and eclectic mix of here's a 3-minute news clip of the day, here's a show you might like, here's this. I like that a lot. And I think that that's a really interesting concept that we haven't really seen on a streaming platform that's as big as Peacock. And I think if you can offer that and really curate it well, and as we talked about earlier, use an algorithm to understand who your viewer is and really serve them, That is a very compelling thing for me. And I mean, I have an account, so they got me to buy in at least on a free account. So for now, I'll probably keep it free. I don't think I'm going to pay for the upgraded stuff, the upgraded accounts. But you know, who knows? Maybe next year they'll have some award worthy show that everyone's talking about. It's, you know, it's a buzzworthy thing, and you know, you don't want to have you got to have your FOMO, and you got to subscribe, and everybody needs to get in on it. So. So yeah, we'll see. I think it's very interesting, but yes, I do want to do the rankings every year. And also I would like to formally and publicly apologize once again to the WWE Network, which I think is the only streaming service I accidentally omitted from that list.
Who knew they had a network?
I literally agreed. They emailed me. I was waiting for an email from them as soon as it went live, like first two comments, like, what about WWE Network? And I'm like, oh my God, I had nightmares about this two nights before it published.
Is it all wrestling all the time?
It's wrestling content. So it's not necessarily matches. Wrestling, like, they related. Might have like classic. Yeah. Yeah. And like wrestling related, like reality TV, stuff like that. But yeah, I felt really terrible about
it. It's the only place to stream SummerSlam 2020.
Man, they emailed me and I was like, I am so sorry. I will literally allow a wrestler to throw me through a table next year.
Oh, please.
Once we're all allowed to be in the same room, can do it on camera. It'll be hilarious. So look for that in the next stream.
Hey, at least it's on Roku.
Video. Yeah, it's available on Roku. So there you go. That has that going for it over Peacock. Yeah, but yeah. But yeah, again, like I just felt so bad. And so many people love wrestling and I felt terrible. I had so many coworkers look over that list and I'm like, did I miss anything? And there were 100 services on there.
That's
and everyone's
impossible.
Like, no, this looks great.
That's 100 impossible
services.
Not.
And nobody caught it, which is just drives me crazy, especially considering we have wrestling fans.
Well, you just gave them a big ass plug worth many thousands of dollars on Twit.
I'm just so sorry.
And we have many wrestling fans watching the show. Ashley Esquetha, you did pretty good. 99 out of 100 ain't bad.
Man, but you want that 100 out of 100, right?
Senior producer at CNET. She's at Ashley Esquetha on the Twitter. So nice to see you. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
You're great. You know who else is great? My friend Harry. I miss when you and Marie would come up here. We could hang.
Someday. Ugh,
it's so sad. Well,
2021, maybe.
Yeah, maybe next year. He is the technology editor at Fast Company, doing those great long form pieces. You got to read the ATAP story, and I can't wait to read the one you're working on now. Thank you, Harry, for being here. Give my love to Marie. Yeah,
totally.
And Mr. Paul Thurrott, he is our cocktail meister on Windows Weekly. Actually, his wife Stephanie is.
That's what I was gonna say. That's my wife.
Yeah,
thank you.
And the king of Windows commentary. His book, the Field Guide to Windows 10, is available at leanpub.com. And, of course, his blog, his website. It's not a blog. It seems like it's a diminutive thing. It's like calling this a podcast.
Yeah, I'm at peace with it.
All right. His site.
I'm mailing it in, Leo. It's a blog.
Okay, it's a blog. At thurrott.com, thurrott. Sometime we'll have a quantum internet. You won't have to mail it anymore.
That's right.
You just think about it.
I could be there and vacationing at the same time.
So awesome. So awesome. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. You can watch us do it live, you know, kind of a behind-the-scenes video at twit.tv/live. Actually, it's video and audio. But we make on-demand versions nicely edited, cleaned up, all the swear words removed. That's available on the website, twit.tv. There's a YouTube channel. And, of course, the best way to get it, get yourself a podcast application and subscribe. That way you'll get it the minute it's available each and every Sunday night for your Monday morning commute from the living room to the bedroom and back. It's a short
so commute. Depressing. So depressing. Way to bring the room down.
Saving a lot on gas, though.
Yeah, just think about that, huh?
True.
Huh? I went to the gas station for the first time since April. Filled it up. And that's it. That's the whole story. It's a short story.
See you next month.
See you next year, practically.
Yeah.
It's a 2-mile drive to work. I do come in twice a week, but still, or more than that, 3-4 times a week. Yeah. 8 miles a week. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful week. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.